Hey, what's going on? You found our secret party. My name is Joe Tavano, and I'm the editor-in-chief of RetroZap.com. This is our podcast mixtape, the first show of its kind. And over the course of this episode, you're going to get a taste for all the podcasts that are part of the RetroZap Podcast Network. Since we went online in 2014, RetroZap has grown quite a bit. Today, we have shows covering everything from Star Wars to Dune to the Animaniacs and more, as well as a few surprises along the way. Our shows innovate, and they're award-winning, but most of all, they're a lot of fun. So sit back, relax, and get a taste of everything that you can find on RetroZap.com. One last thing. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe to the RetroZap Podcast Network on iTunes or Google Play and get every show in one feed. And now, on to the show.
Here we go.
Listening to Brews and Blasters. The Star Wars party starts now.
How are we doing?
Same as always.
That bad, huh?
Pokey religions and ancient weapons are no match for a good blaster at your side, kid.
Let us go inside where we can discuss business over a drink.
Would you join us for a little refreshment?
Everyone's invited, of course.
With Chris Dalton and Joe Tavano, two guys from Boston, who are talking about this stuff anyway.
Whoa.
Let him marinate. It was like a good steak tip.
Oh, yeah.
And...
Renegades.
We're having a nice time.
We just got a cup of super cold.
Zippy sip.
Yes. We had a barbecue.
Society.
Okay, Star Wars.
With that guy.
Jesus.
What's up, Warheads? We are having a good time tonight. Lot to talk about, and we're drinking something special. All right, guys, we'll see you after the jump. I'm winded. I'm winded.
We just did some work.
Oh, hold on. We're rusty.
We just did some work.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, you guys don't even know. Like, when that's going on, we're like, it's like 1994 mosh pit in here.
We're dancing.
We're running around. We're throwing punches in the air. Mm. You know, we're picking up pennies, doing the windmills.
Oh, right, yeah.
It's just us. The wives are in the other room. They don't even know. They're at yoga right
now.
They
have no idea.
They have no idea. We're drinking something fun, too.
We are.
You have no idea. You're listening right now, and you're like, what are they drinking? There have been clues. There have been clues in this 110 episodes.
For a long time.
There's been clues, but only the very few will know. What's up, guys? Welcome to Brews and Blasters, episode 110.
Yeah, we're not going to tell you.
No, my name is Joe. Well, you might really have to tell him. And joining me today, as always, Chris Salton.
Hey.
Oh, yes. The Star Wars party is here, and I just need to know when it begins. When does it begin?
Right about now.
Yeah. All right. Let's tell them. Let's tell them what we're drinking.
Okay, we, as promised.
Yes.
The Blue Russians.
Blue Russians, guys.
They're here.
We made them.
Here, here.
El Dunarino.
El Dunarino.
If brevity isn't your preference.
El Dudeness.
Your Dudeness. Yeah, sippy sips. They're a little darker than I thought, because your insanity is going. You're halfway through insanity.
Yeah.
So we got the skim milk. Cause, so they're healthy now. It's practically a nature drink.
It's a healthy drinky drink.
It's practically nutritious.
Yeah.
You know, magically delicious.
There you go.
There you go. I mean, it rhymes, so it has to be true.
Right.
Right? Yeah.
And we definitely have to get our money's worth out of the food coloring.
Yeah, $5 food coloring. We got four. They don't sell blue.
Yeah, just blue.
They don't, yeah. We're nutbags in there. We're getting skim milk and blue food coloring.
No, you know what they had, though? They had black.
Yeah.
Green. In yellow.
Yeah.
So basically every color except for blue in
exactly.
The food color.
But then they have the packs.
Yeah.
The vials. And you can, that's where you can get the blue. That's how they get you.
Yeah, you have to get the vials, not the gel.
Everyone wants the blue. Mm. So that's why they make them the four pack.
I didn't even see a slot for the blue.
No, they don't even have it.
Yeah.
No. No. They got black, though.
They're getting stingy.
They got yellow. They got green. They got yeah.
That little vial that we got,
uh-huh.
I mean, it was about, what would you say, an inch and a half?
No, less than that.
It was small.
Three quarter inch?
It's like a teardrop.
It is. It's shaped like a teardrop.
Yeah.
You're right.
Back in the day, man, they were like this big.
I know. It was huge. Like, you guys can't see it, but...
About two inches, I would say.
About 2 inches. Exactly. Exactly. You
know, looked and, like you a, know, a miniature syrup bottle or something.
That thing would last you all through grade school.
It really did.
You know? Like,
yeah.
Really?
How many cakes can you bake?
Exactly. How many Blue Russians can you have? Oh, man. Yeah, but we're here and we're drinking them, and you know, they're delicious. They're
really
fantastic.
Good,
so our recipe for Blue Russians is basically, you take a white Russian, then you add blue food coloring to it. We did four drops. It's a very dark blue.
Mm. Yeah.
But, you know, I guess if you use, like, whole milk or cream... You know, it'll be a brighter blue.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you're doing. But we're being healthy tonight.
Yeah.
Health-wise.
But it's that easy.
This is the health podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, we're celebrating.
Yeah.
Chris is insane. I had a birthday.
Happy birthday, man.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hey, hey, hey.
Birthday time.
Yes. I leveled up, as they say.
Oh, your birthday!
In the parlance. I leveled up, as they say, in the parlance of our age. Yes.
Yeah.
One more year. Healthy 21.
There you go. I was going to say. Are you?
I'm 21 for a while.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. One day I'll get to rent a car. Oh, yes. Now I'm... Not 21 anymore. No. But I had a good time. It was good. You know?
That's all that matters.
I had
a day to yourself.
I did. I had a nice day. It was good. I woke up. I had a good breakfast sandwich. I went to Harrison's, got some comics.
Oh, cool.
Read some Walking Dead, read some Star Wars comics.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good day.
Nice.
You know, play a little Battlefront.
There you go.
Yeah. I never get to play Battlefront, man. You know, I just wanted some time to play Battlefront.
I was bumming because I don't know if it was last weekend or the week before.
Yeah.
But they were given the Battle of Scarif away for free over the weekend for
no
Battlefront.
Kidding.
And I just got wrapped up in just all
kinds of stuff. I got everything, though. I have the season pass. I just
You have that?
All. Yeah,
you have
I got
Scarif?
It all. I probably do.
Oh, I was going to say, I've been dying
to play it.
Maybe
we'll check it out afterwards.
Yeah, dude.
Who knows?
Honestly,
guys, we'll see you later.
It.
It's been a great show. We got to go. We're going to go play Battlefront. No, I'm not going to do that to you. I have this blue Russian hair. I can't do that now. That would be crazy.
A bluish-green Russian.
A sea-green Russian.
Hey, it was our first attempt, okay?
Hey.
It'll get better.
It's delicious and it's blue.
Yeah.
When you're not insane anymore, we can definitely go like a little whiter, you know, more whole of a milk.
Yeah, or just get a bigger glass and just add more of everything.
Oh, that's true. We can go highball glasses.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think next time we're going to do highball glasses. Yeah.
We can fill our steins.
Oh, my. Oh, jeez. That's a lot of white Russian. A lot of blue Russian. You got a stein.
I did. Alexa got me a stein.
Well, we went to an event last weekend. We'll talk about that later. We had a good time.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to that. But as we're walking out of your house to go to the event, because we all jumped in the same car to go to Boston.
Only made sense.
We got the best parking spot in the world.
Oh, my God, we did.
We pulled right up in the South End of all places.
That will never, ever happen again.
No, never in our lives. But, as we're leaving the house, I see something shiny on your table.
Well, it's still in the box.
Yeah, but I saw a picture of something shiny.
Mm.
And I'm like, what is this? He got the stein.
I got the stein.
He got the stein.
Mm.
Yeah. I got the R2. What do you have?
I got C-3PO, and what's really cool...
You mindless philosopher.
Well, what's really nice is it's that reflective gold.
It is. That's amazing.
It's not like painted yellow a dark yellow. You know
they
what
did
I mean?
Like the... Gold. Yeah, like the metallic, like vacuum.
Yeah, it's the thing. Shiny gold.
Yeah, amazing.
It's not painted gold.
And now it's time for the Animaniacast, a podcast dedicated to reviewing every single episode of the classic animated TV show, Animaniacs.
Well, let's talk about Space Probed. Now we can get to the first segment. Space
yes.
Probed was written by John P. McCann, and it was directed by Gary Hartle, Dave Marshall, and Rich Ahrens. Kelly, what would you basically tell us? What's the synopsis here of Space Probed?
Okay, well, the Warner Trio is they're staying in a cabin in the woods, which if you watch movies or know anything about horror, then that alone is already setting the tone for, you know, something's bad's going to happen. And they are abducted by an alien ship. And they make a new best friend who is who's an alien. And he wants to do experiments on them. And the running gag is that they keep calling him Yoda. Which,
yes.
Of course I love. I think it's the greatest thing. They even speak to him in Japanese and call him Yoda.
Yes.
And he speaks some alien language, so they keep reading the subtitles and moving words around to change what he's saying, and I thought it was really funny. And there's several cameos in the episode, and they're running around the ship and causing chaos. And they ultimately meet the big alien guy who happens to be a gigantic toe. And
yes.
It's weird and a little creepy.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
But then, of course, in the end, they are returned to planet Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And because I guess the aliens just couldn't take it anymore. the Warners took over the ship. Like, the Warners were going to drive back home. But at the end, it really felt like... They got kicked out of the
yeah.
ship.
And they're like, we'll never see those guys again. Yeah.
So, and of course, but the Supreme, what were they called? The Supreme One.
Yeah.
He was
Toe,
the Supreme One, is there in their cabin asking to buff his cuticles or something like that.
Yeah.
And they all go, ew. And it's gross. So. So, yes, a very funny cartoon, and like Kelly said, kind of weird. That toe mm-hmm. thing was, it's for something that we see every day. Boy, that toe is kind of disgusting.
Yeah, it's a little disturbing. And
it really
and
is.
And he wanted a Q-tip, and I was like, for what?
And bring me a Q-tip.
Yeah, I know. I never cleaned my toes with a Q-tip.
Yeah. I mean, you're not supposed to clean your ears with Q-tips.
Oh, that's because you're supposed to clean your toes.
Well, I guess. I don't know what you're supposed to use a Q-tip for.
Maybe he had nail polish on and he was removing it.
That's
with
probably
nail polish
it.
Remover
that's,
with a Q-tip.
That makes sense.
With a giant Q-tip? I don't know. Who knows?
It was probably a regular size Q-tip and just take a long time.
Oh, let's reboot Animaniacs and get...
just so we can get these answers.
These answers. Remember this? Okay. So, what are your favorite moments of this? Kelly, let's start with you. You mentioned Yoda.
Yes.
Let's talk real quick about Yoda, because...
Oh, yes, please, let's do
okay,
that.
Okay, okay, okay. Before we get into this, now, your Twitter handle is Yoda Princess, at Yoda
That's
Princess.
Correct.
And
yes.
I happen to know you love Yoda, and you have a Yoda collection and things like that, right?
Yes, yes.
Can, tell us a little bit about that. What do you, when it comes to Yoda, what do you like about Yoda, and why does that character stand out for you from Star Wars?
Well, I just always liked his lines the best. I found after I got kind of back into Star Wars when I was a teenager, I would go around quoting Yoda all the time, and I've always been I guess attracted to the wise sort of mentor figures, because I grew up a big fan of the Karate Kid and loved Mr. Miyagi.
Ah.
And also Splinter in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yes.
So I guess I have an affinity for that kind of character. And then also, Yoda's very small, but powerful. And I'm a very petite person. I basically stopped growing at the age of 12. So I'm short and thin and everything. And I like the fact that he didn't have a strong physical presence, but he had wisdom, he had the Force, and he could get things done. And he played that trick on Luke, and he had him fooled that he wasn't this.
Next up is the ARGcast, or Another Retro Gaming Podcast. Each week, video game writers David Giltinen and Robert Workman get together to chat about games old and new, crack a few jokes, and have a good time. Here's a clip fresh on the heels of a recent WWE wrestling event.
What's up, Argonauts, and welcome to another Retro Gaming Podcast. This is episode 53 of the ARGcast. I am your host, David Giltinen, and with me is a man who will tombstone anyone who badmouths ukulele, Robert Workman.
Let me tell you something, brother. If I ever had any wrestling talent, brother, I'd put you in a headlock, brother. Then I'd sell you for $125 million, brother. Brother. Man, I'll tell you, you just had to go right for the feels. Just mentioning The Undertaker right off the bat, didn't you?
Of course.
We'll be talking about wrestling and throughout the show. But hey, we got our old wrestling buddy back on the show, the Bass, Jason Bassett. What's up, Jace?
Listen, I am not a good guy. I'm not a bad guy.
Oh, screw off with that.
I am just a guy.
Yeah, don't bring up Roman Reigns ever.
To be the best, you have to beat the best, all right?
Yeah. Because right now, you were talking about getting off on the wrong foot even further. You had to bring up Roman Reigns. Jesus.
Boo.
You just made the list. But we got a lot to talk about today. We're going to talk about a lot of our favorite wrestling games, since we did just get through WrestleMania week and everything like that. But we do have a few non-wrestling stories we want to get through first. And David, boy, April Fool's Day.
April Fools.
Yeah. Nothing like the Shang Long or the old Simon and Ninja Turtles 2, the arcade game jokes, but still plenty of good jokes this year.
Absolutely, yeah. So there were like some real interesting ones. One that instantly kind of like grabbed me, because I remember like seeing this video, and it may end up not really being like an April Fool's joke in the end, but like it really kind of feels like it at first, is like a new Street Fighter EX game that's possibly coming out.
It's kind of weird because it looks like a legitimate game. You know, if it was engineered, there's engineering, you know, something you know is obviously fake, like IGN's Grand Theft Auto show, which is never happening. But, you know, this actually looks like a real product, but they did a damn good job on it if it is fake.
Yeah, and like I know like a lot of people, like, I don't know, they don't exactly have like the highest of opinions, I guess, of the EX series, you know, for the Street Fighter EX series, I should say.
But Skullamania!
But Skullamania, exactly. And like, that's really the only, I feel like that's like the only way we'll be able to actually see Skullamania in a new game, honestly.
I know.
It's like Arika who like owns like these characters, like there's like Cracker Jack and like, I don't know, like the guy with all the spikes on him and everything, I forget his name, but there's like a lot of like, you know, pretty cool like character designs and everything, and this actually looks like it could be a legit good game, so.
Mm-hmm. And then another interesting one that's actually real but tied in as an April Fool's joke is 8-Bit Bayonetta. It was released for Steam. It's actually a legitimate playable game, and it's actually not bad. But the interesting thing about it is that the game could tie in with an announcement that Sega is going to make next week, indicating we could see the original Bayonetta on Steam, or, you know, heaven forbid, maybe even Bayonetta 2. Probably just original Bayonetta, but still.
Or maybe like a Bayonetta 3. I don't know if that.
Oh, God, what I would do.
That would be insane. That might break the internet for like a week.
Yeah, I know, right? There's a teaser website up, and currently the countdown is showing there's a few days left to April 11th, and that's when an official reveal will take place. But, you know, it's a great way to tie in with that, you know, having 8-Bit Bayonetta. And in fact, we saw quite a few retro ones. There was a really good one that WayForward did, a demake of Shantae.
Yeah.
Making it look like it was something in the Atari 2600 era.
Yeah, it looks great too, honestly. Yeah,
it does, it does. And I like the cover art. The cover art is especially nostalgic. Oh, hang on.
Warning.
At least it's not your
danger, Will Robinson. Crazy. Danger, danger. Sorry.
It's still April Fool's.
That's my Shantae alert. Sorry. But no, I mean, you know, the cover art looks great. And I was really kind of hoping this would actually get made because, like, you can't really do wrong with a good Shantae game. I mean, I was somebody who played Half Genie Hero, but
yeah.
Nope, fake.
Yeah, unfortunately. But it is kind of cool to kind of see these ideas come up, even if they are, like, you know, all just for, like, a joke. And, you know, obviously, with, like, Google, you know, with Google Maps, like, doing, like, their Miss Pac-Man thing, like, where you're, like, kind of following, like, dots, like, around, like, you know, like, the roads and everything. And, you know, it, like, works well. It even works, like, on the Google Maps app as well.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty cool. Pac-Man. That was great. Yeah. Exactly. I ate up everything on my street. It was amazing. And speaking of eating, one other favorite I had, Turtle Beach Feed Bag.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a weird one.
I don't want to walk away from this game, so I'm just going to tie a pizza around my neck.
Hey, right. As if we have something to do while we're playing games. Now we're not, now I'm going to have to get up and go eat.
Damn it.
Yeah, damn it.
But yeah, there were a bunch of good ones, brother. There were a bunch of good ones. New Egg's 9-screen laptop. I mean, as if Razer's 3-screen wasn't enough. I mean, can you imagine unfolding 9 screens at, like, somebody's, like, QuakeCon or something? You'd just be like, what the hell?
For sure. One thing that ended up not being an April Fool's joke, and it felt like it would be at first, was the announcement of a We Happy Few movie. For people who don't know, like, We Happy Few is like a game done by was it Compulsion Games, I believe. And like, they're basically like made up of, like, ex-Irrational Games, like people. So, like, they worked on, like, the BioShock series and things like that. So that's, like, a very BioShock feel to it. And basically, like, you're in, like, a society where everyone kind of, like, takes, like, their happy pills, or, like, their joy, as they call it, to basically kind of, like, be, like, subdued and, like, kind of keep themselves joyful despite the fact that the world around them is kind of shit, basically. So I guess, like, Gold Circle Entertainment basically approached them on this, and they produced the Pitch Perfect films. Which doesn't exactly leave a whole lot to be desired there, but there's also DJ2 Entertainment, who's actually, I believe, like, actually, like, working on the film, and they're actually, like, currently also working on other video game properties, you know, to turn into films, such as Life is Strange, Sonic the Hedgehog, and Sleeping Dogs.
See, I'm the only one who excited me there for Sleeping Dogs because Donnie freaking Yen,
of course,
he's going to be the main guy. See, the problem is the game just isn't that good. You know, people, like, oh, I love the concept and everything like that, but then they play it for, like, half an hour to 45 minutes and it just never picks up. So my concern is, you know, if they do the same thing with the movie where, hey, great idea and everything like that, and then they just let it go to shit.
Well, thankfully, like, it does have, like, a very interesting concept too about, like, I guess we'll kind of, like, see, like, how that translates to film if, like, you know, if, like, the game, like, because I did play, you know, play with the game, like, a little bit, at least, like, in this early stage, like, at, I don't know, it might be, like, E3 or something, but it was, it definitely has, like, some promise to it, but, like, you know, kind of, like, wait until see, like, how the final product comes out, I guess. Bass, like, I don't know if you have, like, any, like, words on the We Happy Few movie or how that could work.
The one thing I see on this article we're reading here is the actual tweet by Compulsion is that not an April Fool's, folks. Also, these things take years. You will see the game way before the movie comes out. And that, like, right there, like, can we mention all these movies that are coming out by the same company? Mm-hmm. But these movies have been, like, announced forever, and we still haven't seen them. So it's, like, it's really going to take a long time before any of these movies come out. Like, I love how it's, like, they play off that it's going to take years, but yeah, we've been waiting a long time. We were waiting a long time for movies that just came out recently. So
yeah,
we've been waiting for a while.
And also, like, the fact that the video game movies in general just don't have the best track record anyway. So
you mean like Warcraft?
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew that was going to be bad when it came out. I knew it.
Looks amazing, but no.
Yeah, so I don't know, we'll see how it turns out, you know, along with, like, the rest of the projects here, but you know, I'm not exactly going to hold, like, the most optimistic light over this project for sure.
Yeah. But I'll tell you what we do have good optimism over. David, in case you recall, back at PAX East, you guys hosted the little bring back retro games panel and everything like that, and I was brave enough to step on the mic destroy Marty Silvis, and then and then suggest NBA Street comeback. Well, yeah. EA has not announced NBA Street yet, but there is another company that's making an NBA Street-style game that's going to release next month. It's a game called NBA Playgrounds. IGN revealed the first trailer for it earlier this week, and it looks amazing. It looks like it's got all the high-flying antics that we've come to expect from NBA Street with some interesting player models. It's got every NBA team and player in there. It's got like a bunch of retired players like Shaquille O'Neal, I think I spotted in the trailer and everything like that.
But Iverson's in there too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Iverson's in there too, you know, because practice.
Star Wars and politics collide on Beltway Banthas, one of the most unique podcasts at RetroZap. With guests ranging from congressmen to journalists to everyday Star Wars fans, you can never tell where this roundtable discussion will go.
One of the points that I really liked and that stuck out to me probably the most is the line by Jen Erso. She's talking to Saw Gerrera, and he says, you know, you don't care for the cause. You can stand to see Imperial flags fly, something like that. And she says, it's not a problem if I don't look up. And that speaks to the safety pin idea and entirely what that is about.
About being there for others who are oppressed when you're not oppressed yourself.
Exactly. Being there for others in a society or a system where there is oppression going on. It is very easy. We talked about this in the last episode, you know, like what would cause you to join a real world rebellion? And I had said, I mean, it'd have to affect me personally. It would have to impact my family. And that's true of a lot of people. And it is wrong. That is wrong. And I'm aware of that. But it's
good you admit that.
It's the reality that most people face. And I think when most people are honest is the actual situation. That's just me. But it's not a problem if I don't look up is one of the strongest political lines in the movie. And I think that is the most important one. You can't keep your head down, and you actually have to embrace the world that you live in, or more so accept and confront the world that you live in the most constructive way possible.
You have to be willing to acknowledge the reality for what it is and see what's going on to your fellow man or your fellow species and decide what you're going to do about it. Are you just going to be another cog in the machine, or are you going to stick to your guns? Are you going to do what's right in your heart and your mind and at least make an effort? I think that's something we all should be questioning. And it talks about this in the film as well. When we see during the Rebel Alliance meeting, them bickering amongst themselves, and some are afraid, some deny the reality of the Death Star. But Jen comes in and says, hey, this is a rebellion, isn't it? What are you guys going to do about it? I actually have concrete evidence, or at least evidence that I've heard secondhand, that the Death Star has a flaw and we can go and destroy this. But unfortunately, the council, even though Mon Mothma really wants to go and follow Jyn, decides not to do it. And Mon Mothma says, I can't do this if it's not unanimous.
That brings us to a really interesting point about this movie. A gentleman by the name of Ilya Sulman, he is a law professor at George Mason University, wrote about this a little bit. And he's a pretty known Star Wars fan in the D.C. area. And he wrote about this movie as sort of another knock against the successful or the merits of democracy. What happened in this movie around that council table is sort of another notch in the belt of saying that democracy is generally doesn't work. We see in the prequels that democracy is not functioning. It's in constant gridlock. It's full of corruption and inaction. Padme gripes about it. Palpatine gripes about it. Anakin gripes about it. And we also see it in action through many different episodes in the Clone Wars. Generally, the body is stuck on not being able to decide what to do. And so either nothing is done or someone steps up to face the situation themselves. Usually it's Padme in the Clone Wars show, and here in Rogue One, it is Jen, Cassian, and those bands of rebels. You have a situation where democracy is embodied at that table, and basically the political class is not going to act, so one person has to step up and act. Do you think that that's a flaw or a credit to the movie?
I actually want to address the parallel itself, because this isn't technically... It is a bit of a democratic body, but this is a war, and it's a much more pressing. It's not like making laws. It's not making legislation. It's, you know, deciding how you're going to act, you know, against, you know, this behemoth of the Death Star. So maybe I don't know.
I think the point that I'm making here is about culturally how movies impact viewers. And there's a book that I have not read, but the basic premise of it is how Harry Potter changed the entire millennial generation's outlook on things like democracy and politics. And it is impossible to deny the strength that movies have on people. Mm. And if you are someone who's been following Star Wars for the past decade, I think you would be hard-pressed to have a favorable view of democratic bodies. You view them as corrupt, self-serving, and you also view them as completely unable to take action. And what you have in Rogue One is one person steps up and basically says, if no one's going to do something, she will. Because the democratic body of the Rebel Alliance, which has to come to an agreement, and they don't, refuses to make that step. And so someone steps up and does it for them. And then Mon Mothma's kind of glad that she did. I mean, you can see it in her grin. But what you have in this real country is we hate the idea of our democracy being undermined, but we also love the idea of our presidents sticking it to Congress when Congress won't do anything. And I believe the quote of this last president has been, if Congress won't act, then I will. And that stands for many presidents. And what you have in culture right now is folks are now looking at the nature of executive action and executive orders and questioning whether or not the executive branch has too much power because now we have a new president coming in.
Right.
This is something that we should always be concerned about. So I guess what I'm saying is that what this scene does and what this movie continues to do is reinforce dangerous political instincts that we all have, that one person acting is what we really need when a body won't do it.
But at the same time, what are the rebels fighting for? They're fighting against authoritarianism. They're fighting against tyranny. They're fighting for the democratic norms to be reinstalled for the entire galaxy. Yes, democracy is messy. Yes, we experience gridlock both in the real world and in the Star Wars universe. But I think ultimately what the point is trying to make is that it's better than what we have under the Empire. So maybe you could interpret the prequels and or the prequel era as being, yes, democracy is messy. Yes, legislative bodies can become corrupt. But, you know, if we allow our frustrations to dominate our worldview on this topic and we allow ourselves to lapse into an authoritarian empire, then why should we complain so much about it in the first place? Maybe that was the point George Lucas was going for in the prequels. Maybe he was saying, you know, he did say explicitly, I want to show how easy it is for a republic to fall into tyranny. And that frustration we collectively have as Star Wars fans viewing this might make us, you know, want to reconsider that.
You mentioned something earlier. You said, you know, we will create something that is better than the system that we have. Like, the Empire is a bad system. We'll put something better. There was a missed opportunity with this movie that some of the extra canon has filled in a little bit. But to put it on screen, we still don't know what the rebels really believe in. We know that there's two factions, Saw Gerrera's faction and the more political faction under Mon Mothma, and we see a messy body of agreement. But we don't actually know what the rebels want to do, and we don't know what exactly they're standing up against and why. Everybody has different political motives for coming to the table. And we saw the Empire wipe out Jedha City, so we, the viewer, know that the Empire is awful, like actually murderous. But up to this point, they probably were only just repressive and anti-democratic. So I honestly think there's a missed chance here to show us what the rebels want to do. Because when you overthrow a system, you don't always get the better system. The Russian, Chinese, Cuban, and Iranian revolutions are all examples of where an oppressive government was tossed out by revolutionaries, and the regime that people got was worse.
Well, we know from years of expanded universe and even in the new canon that a formal name for the Rebel Alliance is the Alliance to Restore the Republic. So, in fact, we do know explicitly what they're fighting for. But you're right, there is a divergent you know, amalgamation of groups coming to form this rebel alliance. It's why it's called Rebel Alliance. We are a group of various different factions to fight against the Empire. I remember reading in the visual guide for Rogue One, Cassian Andor was in fact initially a separatist when he was a kid. He said he was part of the Rebel Alliance since he was 6 years old. He's 26 in the film, so slightly before the Republic turned into the Empire, he was fighting against, essentially against the Republic as a separatist, because he could see as a kid, or, you know, based on what Republic forces had done to him and his family, you know, what he had to fight against. So you have that point of view. You have Saw Gerrera fighting against the tyranny of the Separatists, but then the Republic that initially helped him turn into the Empire, and somehow going from...
Laugh it up, Fuzzball.
Okay, this next show is Classic Marvel Star Wars Comics, and you guessed it, they're talking about the Classic Marvel Star Wars Comics from the 70s and 80s. Your hosts, Richard and Sarah Wolofsky from Skywalking Through Neverland, team up with official Star Wars artist Randy Martinez to go through one issue per episode in detail.
It was a very interesting day, and it was a lot of fun, and it's something I'll never forget. So,
well, you know what, that is a good memory, considering today is Kenny Baker's 82nd birthday.
Oh, is it? Oh, I didn't realize that.
August 24th. Yeah. So that was a good memory and a good story. Thanks for sharing that.
Thank you. Well, you're welcome. I'm always happy to share my fun stories like that.
Awesome.
All right, now with that, let's move on to Classic Marvel Star Wars Comics. And last time we left off with issue number 9, Showdown on a Wasteland World. So, Sarah, give us a synopsis of that last issue, just so we'll know where we are story-wise.
All right, you got it. So, Han Solo, Chewbacca, and the Starhoppers had arrived at the village of Onakra, only to find it under attack by flying high hounds. So they fight off the beasts, they save the life of a young girl named Mary, who is very scantily clad, to the great relief of her father, Uncho. But their relief is short-lived because Sergi X and his gang of Cloud Riders attack, and Han and his band of mercenaries valiantly defend the village from the attack, but not without cost.
And Randy, tell us where the Luke Skywalker and Leia Organa story went.
Meanwhile...
That's why I love having you read this part.
Leia Organa searches the Drexel system for Luke Skywalker, who hasn't been heard from since his last transmission was interrupted.
All right, and then the issue does end when we see the large, what is it called, Sarah?
Behemoth. No. Behemoth?
Behemoth.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to mess this up this entire episode because...
Did you grow up learning that word was...
Behemoth. In my head, that's how I read it. And so that's just stuck.
Well, to be fair, when do you ever use that word?
Exactly.
I use it on a daily basis.
No. That's
like Skywalking
what I'm
Through Neverland is the behemoth of all Star Wars Disney podcasts.
No, so this issue, it's like all about the behemoth.
It's like gargantuan.
Yes.
When do you ever use the word gargantuan?
Well,
though
I use
probably
gargantuan.
Easier to pronounce.
Well, you know what? Back in the, when we were growing up, Randy, every single comic or cartoon or TV show had a big behemoth. So I learned that word pretty early on because everything I watched or read had a behemoth. So I learned that word pretty early, like at the age of 4 or 5.
Wow.
But now let's dive into Star Wars issue number 10.
Aha.
Sarah, what's it called?
Behemoth from the World Below.
Yay. Very good.
But now... This is not called Day of the Behemoth, as it said in issue number 9, and as we always learn, they always change the title.
That's right. Now they have a month, right? These are monthly...
Yes.
Okay.
And this issue was released on January 10th, 1978, so we're now moving beyond the Star Wars release year.
Ooh.
And this is the last issue for writer-editor Roy Thomas and artist Howard Chaykin, who both want to move on to other things, they say, in the Star Wars commentary at the very, very end. Now, Randy, did you notice that Don Glut is credited as a scriptwriter?
I see it now.
What does that mean?
Don Glut wrote the novelization to The Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah, and I never knew he had prior Star Wars experience.
Huh.
So he is now going to be the scriptwriter, which means I'm hoping there's going to be less narration boxes.
He must be a glutton for punishment.
I see where you went there. I gotcha. Now, this is the last issue of the Han Solo Magnificent Seven story arc. Now, Sarah, what happens in this arc ender?
All right, here we go. A summary. The giant reptilian behemoth has been summoned. Sergi X. Arrogantis, the leader of the Cloud Riders, knows that he and his men have no chance against the beast, and he also realizes that the behemoth is being controlled by the village's old shaman. The situation gets out of control, causing the monster to run amok. Wow, all these crazy words. Meanwhile, Leia Organa searches the Drexel system for Luke Skywalker, who hasn't been heard from since his last transmission was interrupted.
All right, Randy, what are your initial thoughts on this issue?
My initial thoughts is it's kind of end of a Godzilla movie.
Yeah, okay, I can see that. Sarah, what are your initial thoughts?
Oh my goodness, this is a page turner. I really enjoyed this one because it's like all action, and you have the behemoth causing chaos everywhere, and Mary turns up again, wreaking havoc with Han, and I just really enjoyed it. Like, before I knew it was over. What about you?
I thought this was a thin storyline, since the whole issue centers around fighting one monster.
That's what I liked about it.
But, exactly. It doesn't need to be anything more, because it's hitting the target audience, which are the little boys, right, initially, who just want to see monsters and laser fight. So it gets it there. But I thought it was just, we're fighting this one monster who doesn't really move around a whole lot. Like the Zillow Beast in Star Wars The Clone Wars. The thing was all over the place, so the story could really open up a whole lot more. But this was pretty much a small, quick fight. The Rebellion storyline is nothing more than a recap from Princess Leia.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we lose some characters, although one is still in question. And we get to see something happen before we see it in The Empire Strikes Back.
Dun, dun, dun.
Randy, any idea what I'm teasing there?
No.
Okay, well, you know what? Good, because we'll get to it. And an amazing discovery for all of us. Now, the cover art was done once again by Rick Hoberg. Now, Randy, go ahead and explain to us what we're looking at on this issue cover.
This is a basically, we got to get out of here kind of a cover. You know, a lot of it, I would say, is almost inspired by Frank Frazetta, where we have the hero usually having their back to the camera with the beast coming towards the camera, except for this one, they kind of cheat a little bit, and you can see the front of Han Solo. But you see Chewbacca's turned backwards a little bit. So I wouldn't say it's a nod to Frank Frazetta, since Frank Frazetta was kind of right in the middle of his heyday back here in the 70s. So I think it was just part of the popular thing that was going on. I think it's full of action. I like the colors that are in there. I think they're the blue and the peachy color on Han, and even the magenta blasters really work against the green of the monster in the background, or the behemoth. So yeah, and I think there's a lot of compositional thing with this tidal wave of rocks coming up here. It looks like a wave, but it's not. But it kind of looks like it.
Yeah.
So it's a good composition. I think Han Solo's face is a little off, but other than that, I think it's pretty good.
Okay. Sarah, how about you?
For me, it's one of my favorite covers we've seen so far, because as Randy points out, the composition is great. You know, it's like there's the focal point, you see Han right there, and the behemoth is actually probably would be the focal point, but the blast from Han's blaster is kind of hiding, obscuring him a bit, so that right there, Han's chest is your focal point, so I think that's why I like it. No, and then like Randy said, it's a nice like wee circular motion there that your eye goes in due to that rock wave formation.
The rock goes up, continuing through Han's arm, through the spines of the behemoth.
Well, back down Han's blaster going to the behemoth, and then back down to
Chewie's leg, and back up again.
Yeah, it's really great.
And now here is Han Solo saying, "Keep firing, Chewie, or this whole planet is doomed. Not to mention us." I like how the word "doomed" is spelled in a squiggly font.
Oh, yeah.
You know that when he's saying that, he's saying it like this. We're doomed.
Kind of
like C-3PO.
Wait, Randy, can you do that?
We're doomed.
There we go.
Sounds like a Scooby-Doo voice.
Well, it's kind of like that. Meanwhile.
Now, we have Han and Chewie firing at the behemoth. Now, do they really think that these laser blasters are going to stop this giant?
I don't think they have any choice.
I think maybe just trying to back it away, maybe hit it. But why don't they ever hit it in the eye? I think if you hit any monster, big or small, in the eye, the thing's going to back away.
That's true.
Either it never that happens. Or your mouth, perhaps.
And then first, yeah, on the tongue, that would really tick me off.
Yeah.
And then we see Chewie with two bandoliers for some reason.
Oh.
I don't think it's a bandolier. I think that's the strap for the gun. One's the bandolier, because you can see it looks different. The bandolier back there, you can see the little, not bullet casings, but whatever that is that he puts into the cartridge. And then the other strap looks totally different, which I think is part of the gun.
Okay, got you there. Okay. Now, once again, we put this out on Facebook and got a whole lot of really fun comments.
Yeah, we put this in our Skywalking Through Neverland Facebook group. And so Gabriel Kolbaugh, he had a comment on those magenta blasters that you liked, Randy. Mm-hmm. And he said, I thought guns being neon pink was something that only happened in the last decade.
A couple of people had pointed out the color of these blasters.
Okay.
And Randy, you said that it contrasts with the green.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. You know what? And I see that point because they do stick out, because if they were black, you'd never see them.
Right.
Now, Rick Peralta says, why does Chewie have a pink Triton spear? Then he says, wait, Han is shooting left-handed?
Which, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, Han's a righty. So now he's shooting with his left hand.
Oh, I see why he thinks it's a Triton spear.
Yeah, because of the bowcaster. Right.
Right.
And Daniel Berry points out that it looks like a Zillow beast, which a lot of people have pointed out. And Donald Wick says, so no DL-44 blaster or bowcaster? Don't these artists know how iconic these weapons are?
No.
Not at the time.
Now it's time for the Deucecast Movie Show, one of the funniest, most engaging movie podcasts out there, and one of the longest running as well. Since 2011, Dave Dollar, Michael Knipp, Pinky, and the rest of the gang have been getting together to debate, review, and discuss movies they love, and maybe a few they don't. Let's have a listen.
All right.
Mikey, number two.
I may have to turn in my man card for these last two. These last two are really doozies.
Holiday in Handcuffs with Jim Hart?
You made me watch that.
I did. You loved it. Yeah. You loved it.
My number two is 1989's Prancer. basically, this little girl finds a reindeer that she thinks is Santa's, and she's trying to, this reindeer is injured. She's trying to nurse it back to health, and it makes me cry every time. I'm having a hard time not crying just talking about it. It makes me cry every time I watch it. It is the sweetest, most loving film you will ever watch.
It's terrible.
This looks terrible.
No, it's
pretty
awful. I've seen it.
Her dad is played by Sam Elliott. And it's great. Cloris Leachman's in this thing.
Abe Vigoda is in this. Yeah, they're really speaking to like the young demographic here.
Johnny Galecki's in this thing. And Jesse Bradford plays boy number one in this thing. This is early Jesse Bradford. Not that his career went anywhere. But, right.
Was he the guy? I know him from
Jesse
some movie.
Bradford was in Swim Fan.
He was also in this for
before
Housewives.
That. Something else. Before he's a love interest fan? In some movie. Bring It On, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right.
I think he was in Bring It Bradford, On.
Yeah. I'm looking for him in the full cast list, and I'm not seeing it.
He's way at the bottom. Boy number one.
Oh, that's
one.
Right. You said that.
Boy number one.
Yeah.
He's not listed in the cast. Oh, yes, he is. Boy number one.
Yeah.
Jesse Bradford.
Yeah, this was early in his career.
Yeah, he was in Bring It On.
That's the only movie I know him from.
The only one I know him from is Swim Fan and Prancer. Those are the only ones I know. But it is, if you want a tearjerker for Christmas, Prancer is the way to go. It's
now, have you seen Prancer 2?
No, I have
or
not.
Or 5.
I don't, I don't watch the sequels.
Well, there is a Prancer 2.
Yeah, it's probably a different girl, though. It's probably not the same girl.
Well, I don't know. Let's see. Let's find out. So Prancer, in 2002 was Prancer 2.
Yeah.
Because they just, Prancer Returns, excuse me.
Yeah, right, sure.
One.
Of course.
Oh, of course, a different girl.
Yeah, it's not the same. It's Prancer. He's probably, back to save another family. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to.
Preteens from a broken marriage live with their mother, they find two reindeer on the way home from school.
Yep.
They thought is Santa's reindeer.
Yep.
Seems to me like Prancer's a reindeer that keeps screwing up.
Well, it's not really Prancer. That's the whole thing. It's one of Santa's reindeer.
Spoiler alert.
Sorry. I mean, anyways.
Prancer.
Wow. Make sure you have your kerchief out, because you will cry if you watch Prancer.
The same could be said of this next film.
Oh,
Have you seen the documentary Deer Prancer?
No, I haven't. Shut up, Dave.
Deer Prancer. Jingle All the Way is one of them. Oh, of course it is. And like, this is like, when I watch this movie, this is arguably like the worst acting I have ever seen on screen.
Sinbad.
And, yeah, Sinbad.
He's not a good actor.
Jake Lloyd is in this. I mean, it is terrible. Terrible movie, but I love it, and I watch it every year.
It's not bad, though. It's like, I like anything where there's like a caper involved.
You've actually seen a Christmas movie?
Jingle All the Way.
Jingle All the
Way. Prancer.
That's because it had Phil Hartman in it. I wanted to see it. I mean, no, you can't go wrong with Phil Hartman.
Yeah, it's really, really a lot of fun. Arnold Schwarzenegger plays like an overworked dad, and he forgot to pick up his son, Turbo Man, the newest doll.
I love that movie, actually.
So he goes out on Christmas Eve to try and hunt it down and whatnot, and of course it's sold out everywhere.
I never figured that as a guilty pleasure, though.
It's kind of like legit. Yeah, it's kind of like Santa Claus. It kind of qualifies as a legit good, but
right?
I think the acting brings it down to a whole new level because it really is pretty awful.
Now, have you watched Larry the Cable Guy and Jingle All the Way 2?
That was recent.
That was 2014.
Yeah, that was 2014.
I'll have to check it out. Add it to the list.
I think what we're finding out here is all these Christmas movies have crappy sequels. Yeah. That's what we're finding out.
Yeah. Jingle All the Way, 17% with critics, 37% with audiences.
Because even Christmas Vacation, although that's not a crappy Christmas movie, it has a direct sequel. It's like Cousin Eddie's Adventure or something like that.
Same with Christmas Story. Great Christmas movie.
Oh, it does have the sequel.
They came out with like a sequel like a couple of years ago, and I was like, why? Why does this exist?
Jingle All the Way 2 doesn't even have a critic score. It's only 30% with audiences, and that's it.
Right, yeah. I think it was a Crackle original.
Probably.
Probably, yeah.
Aren't they all? All right, Jennifer, number one for you, your favorite Christmas guilty
pleasure.
Drum
roll, please.
I kind of feel like I should go last so we can just drop the mic and walk out because this is a bad movie.
You're not going to beat mine, sister.
Mine is not
There's
as
no
bad.
Oh, I don't know.
Mine is not as bad as yours probably is, so if you'd like me to go, then you go. We can do
no,
it.
No, no, no.
Okay. No, it's good. It's good. I am 100% sure that you guys have not seen this movie. It is Care Bears the Nutcracker.
Oh my God.
And
Jennifer, that's my number one.
That You've is not my, seen it, right?
That is my number one. No.
Shut up, you're joking.
No, I have seen that crap.
What is wrong with you, Mike?
I've seen that crap.
That is my number one. Care Bears.
No way, are you serious?
Yes, I when I was a kid. Yeah. I was obsessed with Care Bears.
I had to track it down.
He's not kidding.
DVD so my
He's
kids can
not
watch
kidding.
I watch it. They are not allowed to watch it without me until I've seen it. Like I love this movie. And it is so terrible because I don't think there's a good Care Bears movie anywhere.
No,
and it's like not
it's
even really
not.
The Nutcracker story. It's horrible.
It is
horrible
good.
Movie.
Is it Care Bears?
But I love it.
Nutcracker Sweet. Okay, yeah.
Care Bears. That is my number one as well.
No. That's, yeah. Well, okay. Then yours is always bad.
I can top you.
I feel like Dave did not top it though.
No, Dave can't top it.
No, I can't top it.
So the only one that like sort of later in the game that got a theatrical release, I went and saw the Care Bears in Wonderland. That got a theatrical release, and I went and saw that crap. But the Care Bears Nutcracker Suite is horrendous, but
I
love it. I love it. It's horrendous. It just takes me right back to childhood because I was all into the Care Bears movies. I would always use my little sister as a scapegoat and say, "Oh, she wants to watch this, mom," but really,
it's got like pirates and sword fights and.
Oh, Dave! Good gracious!
It's the Care Bears Nutcracker Suite.
My favorite version of the story was told to me by some friends of mine.
Oh, no.
Care Bears. I've lost my memory,
I cannot believe this is on any of your lists, let alone number one.
I can't believe that. And, I would have never thought. I thought if I had an ace up the sleeve on this one.
I've even lost my arms.
Oh, the poor Nutcracker. I'm watching it now. It's
the Nutcracker. Yeah, it's vicious.
Oh, it's so bad.
Here, let us help.
It was supposed to get a theatrical release, but because of the poor box office of Care Bears in Wonderland, it went straight to TV instead. Yeah.
No, so I had this on VHS as a kid. It was like, it came out like 88 or 89. And
88.
Yeah, 88.
I watched it all the time. And it's the one, like I said, I had to track it down on DVD and I was so excited to watch it. And even though it was terrible, I just didn't even care. Like it was.
I was
don't know.
Probably like
it even has. It does have like adventure for boys.
It does.
Like
that's
his brother, her brother has like all kinds of fights. And
yeah. It was awesome.
Well, just to because Pinky's curious, he's asking me.
What's a Care Bear?
In this story, the school teacher tells children a version of the Nutcracker, which features the Care Bears. While helping a sad girl named Anna, the Care Bears and Care Bear cousins.
That's right.
Lionheart meet a wooden soldier and a group of malicious rats from the place called Toyland. Entering this place, Anna and the family learn that an evil vizier is planning to destroy
it
with the help of his rodent army and has his sights on a powerful ring that is long hidden from the Denzians.
Yeah, man. It's got everything, man. I loved it.
It really does.
I cannot believe that is your number one.
And so it premiered on the Disney Channel, back when Disney, like, you had to pay for the Disney Channel.
Right, right. Yeah, that's why I saw it, because we had the Disney Channel when I was a kid.
Oh, I don't know that we did, but maybe we did.
That's where I saw it
tape,
originally.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I've never owned the VHS.
Oh, we do.
VHS, yeah.
I can
How
send
you,
it to you, but not
wait,
during
there
Christmas.
Was actually a VHS of you found one of those?
No, I have it on DVD.
You've got it on DVD? Like,
it's on DVD.
Like bootleg? Yeah. Or
no, it's like a legit. That's actually why I forgot it was called Care Bear Nutcracker Suite. It says Care Bears the Nutcracker.
Oh, geez,
and it's like a, it's a DVD. Like it's, and it's not, it's like definitely re-released, but I'm not sure it's even digitally enhanced. It's terrible. But it's on DVD.
It is on DVD for $3.99.
Add to cart.
Yeah. And
add a cart. Yeah. There you go. We have quite a collection now with Home Alone 4 and Care Bears.
It's
no 4 and 5. Sleep.
4 and 5, excuse me. Yeah.
$3.99. Oh, it's on 4K. I'm just kidding.
4K.
Answer two.
And it's so good that one of the critics said that the special is strictly for those who prefer jelly beans to Christmas dinner.
Well, I mean, that's everyone. No.
For real. Gosh. Dave,
go.
I don't know what you
know. What's annoying, though, is that this is on DVD and the Muppet Babies aren't.
Yeah,
like,
what's
that's
up
not
with
fair.
That? That's
just dumb.
That is epically wrong.
Yeah. All right, Dave, what do you got?
All right. My number one can't top that at all. It just can't. My clip can't even top it, but I'm going to play it anyway.
What is your number one? Probably some stupid Hallmark movie, isn't
yeah.
it?
So I had planned to marry Peter, but
oh,
I married Jack instead. Thank goodness my father was right.
Hold on.
Life doesn't always turn out the way you plan. But Jack gave me the perfect gift, a stamp in my passport. He took me to Florence for our honeymoon.
Almost there.
I guess you might say he gave me the world. Peter once asked
Here
me
comes.
When it was that I fell in love with Jack. And I told him it was while you were sleeping.
While you were sleeping, I freaking love this movie.
That's
I do.
Not a horrible
I
movie,
love.
That's not a horrible
it's a.
Movie,
it's a. It's a. I watch it every time it's on. It's like there are movies that are that are Oscar winners that are higher up in my top 100 whatever. That I will watch this movie over those movies. I love this movie.
Wow.
It's a Christmas movie. It's a great movie. And honestly, on Rotten Tomatoes, it's like 60 or something percent on Rotten Tomatoes. So it's not as bad as I thought it was. But,
no, yeah. I mean, it's kind of a legit movie.
But you won't find a ton of people who just absolutely just are in love with this movie like I am. So
that was one of my friend's favorite movies growing up.
That is my...
It's all right. It's good, but not great.
Oh, whatever. That's. I need to send you... You need to watch My Life in Ruins.
It's no Care Bears. I mean...
For real. What is?
I mean, yeah, exactly.
Gosh.
What it actually is. Oi. So that's our
guilty
pleasures.
Pinky's number one, right?
Jingle All the Way.
Oh, yeah, the Jingle All the Way. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, and Mikey's number one. You got your number one there.
I still kept waiting for you to like say you actually had a different number one. I'm baffled.
I legitimately have that on my list and on my phone as my number one.
What's
promise
fun
you.
About these kind of lists too is a lot of times we'll bring up films and we'll get somebody on Twitter. Like one person will go, "I used to love it when I was a kid." So hopefully we can kind of connect with some of those people.
I never fathomed that anybody else would have.
Well, but then again, you never fathomed that somebody in Cincinnati could love this movie as much as you did.
I know.
And so it's like
hands across America.
There are probably people across America that are closeted Care Bear the Nutcracker Suite fans.
Now they can come out
that are waiting for people on a podcast like this to be able to say stand up and go.
Safe place.
I love the Care Bears too, and I'm proud of it. I care.
Yeah.
I can't breathe.
That's it.
That's right.
To give their Care Bear stare, their Care Bear tweet. So guys, if you guys are out there, we want you to speak up, guys and girls, and say, you know what? I love the Care Bears Nutcracker Suite as well. Matter of fact, Mikey will send you the DVD.
That's right. I'll go on.
He will send you the DVD.
I mean, I've already added 5 copies to cart. So,
yeah.
Because, I want to make sure they're placed throughout the house in case I, wherever there's a DVD player, I'm going to have a copy of it.
Next up is the Dune Cast, a podcast dedicated to the fantastic and influential world of Frank Herbert's Dune. Once a month, my buddy Rod Johnson and I get together to talk about one book in the Duneverse and look forward to covering everything Dune as it was released. And with new Dune movies in production, you can bet we'll be the top podcast covering all the action as it unfolds.
Welcome back to the Dunecast, RetroZap.com's monthly, semi-monthly maybe, monthly from now on podcast about all of the Dune books, the Duneverse, and many more films, television shows, many more things to come. My name is Joe Tavano. I'm the editor-in-chief of RetroZap.com, and joining me today is my good friend, Rod Johnson. How you doing, man?
Joe, I'm doing great. I am glad to be back at this.
Yeah.
You know, I think we both had a rough couple months between sickness and work and holidays. And
yeah, it's been a little crazy. It feels good
to be back.
I kind of was thinking in my mind, we just wanted to give the listeners maybe an idea of what it was like between the span of time between Children of Dune and God Emperor of Dune. We wanted to make them wait like it was 3,500 years. I think that's kind of what the main idea was.
Yeah, and I think it worked out great.
Yeah,
you know, Wado's been ruling for 3,500 years, and he's been ruling with an iron fist, as the God Emperor tends to do.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
Or an iron flipper, I guess.
So, if this is your first show, welcome. Today we'll be talking about God Emperor of Dune, the fourth book in Frank Herbert's Dune saga, which has six books in total, and then a number of other books after that, continuing on with Kevin J. Anderson and Brian Herbert, which we'll be getting to in the future. But yeah, today's all about God Emperor of Dune, one of the weirdest books I've ever read in my life, and perhaps one of my favorite as well. So really excited to get into it. But yeah, before that, there's some things we have to talk about.
There is some news
and
some significant news.
I didn't think we're going to have news in the show. I never thought that. I thought it was going to be, you know, we'll go through the books one at a time. We're going to have a nice retrospective on everything Dune. You know, maybe if Kevin J. Anderson and Brian Herbert publish a new book, that'll be great. We'll cover that. But
a special release of a movie or something, you know, that was about the extent of what I expected.
Yeah, like a documentary or something like that, you know. I didn't really expect to have look to the future, which is kind of weird when we talk about Dune, because literally everything is about looking to the future. But yeah, no, we
were not prescient at all.
No, we were not. But yeah, no, it's been announced that Dune is going to be coming to the big screen,
absolutely,
and the small screen.
And the rights have reverted back to Brian, his sister, and Kevin J. Anderson is also going to be involved. So, you know, people that sound like they want to stay true to the original vision of the show.
Yeah.
Or the original vision of the series. I'm sorry.
The franchise, right. The people who were actually involved in creating a large amount of it. The Herbert family, it's reverted back to them after years and years of wallowing and just waiting. Because there was a failed attempt at a Dune movie, a remake of the original book in the early, like maybe 2009, 2010 area. And there's some great concept art from that, but drawing heavily off of the 1984 movie. Have you ever seen those?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen them. You know, they've been tweeting them out. So it was always one of those, I was like, man, I wish we could have gotten something, because the 84 movie had its faults, but it was, you know, it was a product of its time, and I think they were trying to cash in on Star Wars a little too much.
Sure.
But which is funny, as Star Wars was heavily influenced by Dune. But then we had the made-for-TV movies that, you know, they weren't terrible, but they were made-for-TV movies, so the budget wasn't there.
Yeah, and before, TV was the medium it is now.
Yeah.
I mean, TV is huge now. I mean, I think that in the era of Netflix, a TV series is nothing like what it was in 2003 or 2000 when these came out. So, yeah.
Featuring a young Professor Xavier.
Exactly. So we have, Legendary Pictures involved with the Herbert family that's going to be making new movies and new television series. That was a major announcement. And Denis Villeneuve, is that how you pronounce his name?
I would say it's Villeneuve.
Villeneuve, okay.
But, that's just, I think there was a baseball player with that last name, and
all
that's
right.
How it's pronounced, so I'm going to guess.
All right,
guess.
We're bad at this.
Send your emails to Joe Tavano.
Dunecast@retrozap.com, the email address. So he directed Arrival, which is, you know, up for a number of Academy Awards this year. He's slated to run to direct Blade Runner 2049 as well. So
Sicario.
Yeah, you know, Sicario. Right?
You know, he's got some chops.
He got some chops. But so they're going after the best.
And then they've said that they're not confirming that they're going to start with the original Dune book.
Yeah. And this excites
me
a little
bit. Yeah, it's like, where could we start at then?
So remember the source, too. This is Brian Herbert, who is definitely has a big stake in his books that he wrote. I mean, what did he write? 7, 8 books? 13 books?
13
books. Right. So, yeah, he has a big stake in telling his story as much as his father's. So that is going to happen. I mean, there is no way around that. And if you're a Frank Herbert purist, I think that time has passed. I think it's time to accept Dune as a larger franchise and really embrace the future of what this is going to be. Because it's going to be really exciting to see Atreides, Harkonnens, Carinos, the Butlerian Jihad, everything that, and this may sound crazy, literally everything that happened after the first book, because there's such a myopic focus, I feel, on the first book, which is a classic. It is an amazing book, but media just always focuses on just that book, and Dune is a saga. I never came to it as one book, and most people don't. Did you? I mean,
no. I mean, the first book we've talked about before could stand on its own, but
I think
once you start Messiah, it's a saga. It's a saga, and you're in for the ride.
Yeah, most people started reading Dune with at least 6 books out. I mean, that's true. I mean, in recent memory, I mean, they've been out longer than they haven't in recent memory. So, I mean, I don't. It's a very myopic focus, and there's this weird idea that only the first book is good, and it's insane and infuriates me. So it makes me very excited to hear Brian Herbert say, yeah, I mean, we're talking about the entire Dune saga and not just focusing on the original story. So that's cool.
I gotta be honest with you. If I had my choice, like they said bald headed Rod, we want your input. What do you think? And I would say, please do the saga of Dune as a television show.
Wow.
And then do some of these prequels as movies.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, maybe you do the prequel of Leto, Paul's father, Leto, meeting Duncan and stuff. You know, you could tell that through a movie like a prequel, but then Dune be like a 10-episode series, much like we've seen with Game of Thrones. I think we've both talked about how we'd love to see that. You could actually flesh out the story more.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, I mean, it's ripe for telling that story.
So if they want my input, there it is.
Yeah, I mean, they could easily do it. Like the first 8 books as an entire series. It would be audacious. It would be very expensive, but it could be done well. Because you can't drop these stories into a 2-hour film. It's just impossible.
No, you really can't. And you know, even the made-for-TV series that we were talking about was, you know, 1.5 hours, 3 episodes, and 1.5 hours each. You still had to condense a lot.
Yeah, I mean, just not enough, not in depth enough. I think that in the era of Game of Thrones and these longer Netflix-style series that are out, Dune is ripe for a really in-depth, very faithful adaptation to the small screen, and I'm really excited to see what's going to happen. So there's not a ton of news yet, but a lot on the horizon, and we're going to be there. This is going to be your source for, you know, geeking out about Dune and celebrating Dune and talking about all the new news. This is going to, Dunecast is going to be the place to hear it all and talk about it all.
Yeah, and when this news became public, I was on cloud 9 all day. I think I don't know how many people tagged me on Twitter. I was getting Facebook messages and texts from people, and I'm like, I know it, people. I'm already all over it.
I'm on it. This is fantastic.
Do you see this grin? I know already.
Yeah, we were talking to Brian Herbert, like, directly. We're like, this is awesome.
Yeah, I called him. I said, Brian, you need to do this as a television series.
Yeah, I wish we had that.
Star Here's a prequel for a movie.
Could you imagine? That'd be amazing.
Oh.
So we're back. We're going to be, you know, continuing on that monthly schedule that we originally had set out to do. I think the break was good where we broke for Children of Dune, because there was, you know, what we're moving into is a much different story than the first three books. And that's intentional, because Herbert envisioned his series as having a trilogy, then an interlude, and then another trilogy, which is kind of how Lucas envisioned it too. Kind of weird there, that similarity. All right, now it's time for a Star Wars podcast from an important point of view. Kanata's Castle features two moms who love Star Wars that get together every week to discuss all the latest goings-on in Star Wars and Star Wars fandom. Their laughter and positivity is infectious. What else can I say? Have a listen.
This is Balatik, and you're listening to Kanata's Castle podcast. A podcast that's rated E for everyone. Hey, you. I see you. What's down?
First of all, everybody, this is Professor Becca.
Sorry.
And second of all, what I heard was blah, 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 Luke, blah, 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 the Force, blah, 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 Star Wars. Sorry.
It's okay. Yep, obviously broke Archidiju's little animatronic little heart.
I know.
You know, because he's been there forever too. No, he's not Snoke, people. I know Archidiju's been there since the beginning, but he's not Snoke. Oh, see, now I'm totally going crazy on this. Anyway.
Yeah, what are you doing?
I know, right?
You know what Luke Skywalker's going to say? The first words out of his mouth. We know what they are already.
Who's more foolish, the fool or the fool who followed me up here?
No. It's, sorry. Oh, crap.
Oh, crap. You found me. No, that's not how the Force works. Go back down there.
Why, George? Why?
We want to know why. I know Devin is really excited about sharing this. We were both kind of like taken aback, and it was so exciting. It was funny too. But StarWars.com, I saw it on Twitter. You said it was February 24th. There was a little. Did you know? And it happened to focus. On us. Well, not really us. On Maz's castle.
On the real Kanata's castle, yes.
Yes. So why don't you tell everybody about that in case they haven't seen it yet?
Well, it said, it looks like a little Topps card thing, but it said, did you know? It says, Maz Kanata's castle contained numerous areas aside from the main room, including private casinos, guest suites, even a spa and sauna. So we were laughing about that because you had mentioned about having a spa day on our Valentine's Day recording, and we're like, it's true.
See, I had telepathy through the Force. It was telling me it's true, all of it.
Oh my gosh. And then I looked it up at StarWars.com, and it was talking about it being an ancient edifice or a place of importance, or a little mini temple, where a battleground, or it is a battleground for the Jedi and the Sith, or rumored to be a battleground, excuse me. So interesting.
It is. It's really, because we were discussing off air, we should probably record ourselves as we're talking.
I know.
All the time. We were saying how interesting that was, because if that's the case, how much does the First Order or even Kylo Ren know about Sith artifacts? Because they blew the whole thing up.
I know. They shouldn't have done that. And no. Also, how much of that Force vision was that lightsaber? And how much of that Force vision that Rey had was just the temple?
Ooh. And you know what? That makes... I like where you're going with this. This could be a topic for another day, too.
I know. It just popped into my head. I'm sorry.
But I like that because now I'm going to feed off that, what you just said, because going back to what you looked up on StarWars.com with it being an ancient Sith temple, we do hear in that Force vision, we do hear a little bit of Palpatine's voice, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So that could be the remnants of that playing in with the Skywalker's lightsaber together.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So you got a little, because I've always said her vision to me was a mixture of light and dark, just a force at play.
Yes.
Not so much. And it's interesting because Maz says to her, the light has always been there. But that vision was a combination of both.
It was.
So interesting. You wonder if that temple, whatever may be a residue within there, because, you know, not to get off topic, but in the spiritual realm of things, not Star Wars, but just in the spiritual realm of things, I like stuff like that. I'm very into that whole spiritual world and ghosts and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, they do say that spirits can connect themselves with an item.
Objects or items or even buildings and rooms.
Exactly. So that all falls into play there with what could be going on.
Yeah.
Not just a lightsaber in itself, which obviously does have force residue with it, but so does that temple. So interesting. I like where you're, you know, you adding that, because that makes your whole, it opens up a whole new can of worms with that.
More worms.
Worms. Noodles, worms.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
Here we go.
Noodles. See, and when you say noodles, and I have to say noodle, don't noodle. Just, I have to. It's like,
it's okay.
It's like shaving a haircut.
See, this is how we are. Oh, love it. But yes, I think noodles is going to have to be next in line for our mascot and motto, not just Maz.
Okay, my next guy is Mark Austin from the,
Special Edition. I'm sorry, I'm giggling already because, guys, if you don't know, there's a lot of inside joke in between the three of us, actually. yes, we're including Mark.
Should I tell the story or not?
You can tell it. I'm just giggling. I'm okay. Trying not to. I'm trying to be very quiet while you tell your story.
All right. I have to remember it exactly. Probably. This is probably not exactly how it happened, but on Twitter, he was talking about Mark Hamill, or I was talking about Mark Hamill and Luke Skywalker, and how I've been in love with Luke Skywalker since I was 16 when I first saw Star Wars. Oh, I'm dating myself. It's okay. Anyway,
it's
okay. So he said something about, well, what about me? And I said back, well, I wouldn't kick you out of bed for eating crackers.
I'm sorry.
Which is a saying, you know, that's something my mother used to say, and he was laughing because that's something his own mother would say too. But so the crackers thing has just been an ongoing joke with him and I. And I mentioned, you know, that if he's going to be at Celebration, that I have some crackers for him. And he'll just say, crackers.
He's just a lovely, lovely man. If you ever get an opportunity, folks, to meet him or even just talk with him or just listen to him speak, because let me tell you, he's got this voice that I could just listen to him talk all day. Even if he was just saying noodle, I'd be okay with that. So yeah, definitely look for him if he's around. I know he's typically at like Celebration London's and that. I don't know if he'll be,
well, he lives in the U.S.
Yes, he does, but in California, though.
Right.
I'm not
so
mistaken.
I'm hoping to see. I'm hoping to see you at Celebration, Mark. If you're listening, and I have crackers. Seriously.
But he's she does.
I'm bringing a box of crackers, just in case. And maybe.
But you know, he's not the only Mark though that you want to see, is he?
No.
you gotta say that again. Like no. Love that. Sorry. Who's that other Mark you want to check out?
Mr. Mark Hamill. He's my boyfriend.
I'm sorry, that cracks me up whenever you put that on Twitter. It just makes me smile.
Welcome to Kanata's Castle, a podcast that's rated E for everyone, with your hosts, Red 5 Mum and Becca Benjamin. Two mums that love talking about Star Wars. So come on in and have a seat and a cool glass of blue milk. So there's just one rule, no fighting. And whatever you do, don't stare at any of it. Hey, get away from that, you milk milker. Who let the Wookiee in the other power converters? Yeah, don't do that.
Okay, Star Wars collectors. Dengar Dan and Mike Tarkin are the Standcrawler podcast, and these two are some of the most authentic and sincere voices in the collecting community. These aren't millionaire collectors, and they don't have museums, but they do have a lot of love for Star Wars figures and a lot of knowledge, too. From news to opinion to tips on how to style your Star Wars room, Dan and Mike have you covered.
I've been holding out on you. There's a couple that I didn't show you.
Okay. Oh, good, good, good.
Okay, so this next one, and it kind of, at the time when this came out, I needed to have it, and I definitely had it because there was a video game and comic book attached to this. This okay. one?
Yep.
Shadows of the Empire, Chewbacca.
He's on my list, too.
Is he?
Yep. Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Go ahead. Go ahead. I'm listening.
I mean, so, at the time, I didn't bat an eye at the thing.
Right.
Because I loved the whole Shadows of the Empire thing that was going on.
Sure, sure.
And looking at it now, this is the most ridiculous, insane 90s pure gold action figure I've ever seen in my life. So you have Chewbacca wearing a bionic eye patch over his right eye. He has a flat top haircut now.
That's my favorite part of it. Rocking the flat top.
And he's got some crazy armor all over him, and he's got a big old Power of the Force 2 smile.
Right.
So I, yeah. That's,
oh, good call. See that? We're on the same wavelength.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's awful. That is just, yeah, like flat top. Come on. See, and it's like
you could stand him on his head.
Yeah, right? Right.
There's not a doubt in my mind.
Either on his head or on his feet. Now, let me ask you this. If that wasn't Chewbacca in disguise and it was just, no, I can't even finish that sentence. I was going to say, what if he was an actual bounty hunter named Snoova?
Snoova.
You know what? It's just awful. Wookiees wouldn't do that.
No.
Wookiee don't dress that way.
Well, it just makes no sense.
Yeah.
Oh, it's, whoa. The 90s were a crazy time.
See what I mean? Scary figures. See, okay, I'm gonna cheat here. I have Yarna from Jabba's Palace.
Okay.
And I think all I have to say about that is Nuff said.
Come on, that's all you're gonna give me?
Say no more. Right? I mean, Mommy, who's this lady from Star Wars? And why does she have... Yeah, okay. But I don't want to lose our clean rating here.
Yeah, we can still talk about it and have a clean rating. Let's... So she's super articulated, first of all.
Yes.
And she is very movie accurate.
Right.
What's not to like about this?
What kid on the shelf ever picked one?
I didn't, but what grown man bought one on eBay that you may know?
Oh no. Well, see, I got mine in the store. I'm not denying I have one.
I mean, it's kind of one of those figures that, yes, it's insane,
yeah,
but you're not going to pass it up if you see it in the store.
Right, right. And see, I think Hasbro will probably call that figure as one of the first, like, real out there fan, you know, that the fandom was crying for.
Yeah.
And then it got released, and then Hasbro was able to go, yeah, see, this is why we keep putting out Vader.
Right. See what happens when we listen to you guys?
That's right. So, but yeah, just looking at that thing on a card in this, you just gotta wonder what kid went, oh, Stormtrooper. Oh no, wait a minute, Yarna! So anyway, that's my half a pick, because like I said, that was an easy one.
Yeah, but I'm so messed up, I love that figure, so.
Well, sure, as collectors trying to be have accurate representation of the movie, yes, I agree.
Oh man!
So that's my half a pick. My actual pick is Luke Skywalker in Back of the Tank.
Yeah. Okay. I came up with that one too.
Oh, and good. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
It's Luke in a diaper, man. It's Luke in a diaper.
It's really bad.
Yeah. And when you go from when you see him in the scene, and it's like, okay, he's in a tank of fluid, and you know. Clearly, he's got to have something on, and just as soon as the scene starts, it ends, right? He gets lifted out, and then he's in a robe in the sick bay there, so everything's fine. You never have to think about it again, but I've got that figure on my shelf in the back of the tank.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it's got that cool feature where you can actually fill the thing up with water,
yeah.
And there's a little straw that you can blow into.
So it makes little bubbles?
It makes little bubbles. So now you've got diaper-clad Luke making bubbles. In the, yeah, so scary. And I think might have. I think you know what, that actually does it for me.
Okay.
Have you got one more or?
I do. I have to make a choice on which one do I want to talk about.
Make it the really bad one.
Well, they're both okay. since I already talked about Vader. And one of my other choices, somebody on Twitter has mentioned, so I'll leave it for that.
Okay.
I'm going to go with another one you haven't seen yet.
All right.
All right. It is Elan Slezbogino.
Oh, okay, right.
With the Death Sticks?
Yeah, from Attack of the Clones.
Attack of the Clones. And it's purely just because I thought that was one of the worst scenes in Attack of the Clones, because it was so, I thought his acting and was so over the top and ridiculous.
Right.
That the fact that they made a figure with him, and not just a figure, but he came with like a prop with a bar and a drink and everything, holding death sticks.
Oh, I'm looking at the back of the card right now. Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought it was it's. And then I don't even know. I can't believe it was made. It's a terrible figure.
Yeah. Oh my god. Yeah. I can't take my eyes off it. Wow. Look at that hair.
Those little alien things in the back. Yeah. It's and actually, to be honest with you, I think they did two of them. There was like a first and a second run of him where they they did changes with him and everything.
Right. Right.
So.
You know what? If you look at the figure, there's a I got a headshot here of the figure. Kind of looks like Johnny Knoxville.
He does. I wonder if he ever got he went home and rethought his choices.
Oh, good grief. After he saw the movie, I'm sure he did.
Yeah.
I gotta buy some death sticks.
You don't want to buy some death sticks.
I want to go home and rethink my life and my acting career.
It's so bad.
Oh, man.
What have I done?
We hit up social media a couple days ago. We were asking folks to kind of sound off on their own. And, boy, we got some responses. There were ones that you just go, of course. Why didn't I think of that? And there was ones I don't think I've ever seen the figure before. So we'll just kind of run down the list here. Super Awesome Geek Show. Mentioned the screaming Mace Windu from Clone Wars, where I think if you squeeze his legs, his arm does like a saber chop type deal.
Yep.
But it's Sam Jackson as Mace Windu absolutely shrieking. His face is actually just shrieking.
Mm-hmm.
Which we remember. That guy opened his mouth once in all the prequels, and that's when he was going out the window.
Revenge of the Sith. Yeah, that's a terrible figure.
Oh man.
Skywalking Through Neverland is one of the premier Star Wars podcasts and one of the premier Disney podcasts, a show that was ahead of the curve well before the merger of these two amazing companies. Your husband and wife hosts, Richard and Sarah Wolowski, are an injection of sunshine into your podcast feed every week. Let's roll the clip.
And that's how, that's sort of the background on how Star Tours came about. And out of that brainstorming meeting, it was decided that Tom Fitzgerald would be the lead in terms of being the show producer. But because I was the kind of the film guy by then, I would be the media producer. And I had also been given the role by Randy of being the casting director for WED, hiring the voice talents and things like that. So, yeah, I had to find the voice of Rex, which was a challenge. But that's kind of the background of how the simulator eventually became Star Tours, and of course eventually it was used on Body Wars too.
Now it's funny that you were pitching the idea of a Millennium Falcon ride and then ending up at the Mos Eisley Cantina, because that's what they were thinking about doing with the new Star Wars land just a few years ago before they decided to rearrange everything and rewrite it. So really you were 35 years ahead of yourself.
That's exactly basically what they're doing. I don't think it's going to be the Mos Eisley Cantina, but I understand there's going to be a cantina with blue milk. Yeah. And you're supposedly going to ride the Millennium Falcon. And it's like, okay, here I am 30 some odd years after we were playing with simulators at WED. They're doing what I thought would be really cool. I mean, who wouldn't want to ride on the Millennium Falcon?
Oh, definitely. Right. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I mean, when I'm a bit of a Trekkie too. So when they had the Star Trek thing in Vegas, I was like, well, I'm going. And we went up there and I went on that thing and I was like, yeah, this is cool. I was disappointed because they didn't quite execute it as well. Everybody was doing simulators by then. And, oh, we have to go on a simulator thing to escape from the Enterprise. Why don't you just beam us back? I wanted to see the engine room and sick bay and everything else, but I'm complaining now. Okay.
You know, we had put out on our Facebook group page that we'd be talking to you about Star Tours, and we told our listeners, if you have any questions, now's the time. And boy, did we get some questions. Jeremy Hunt, he asks, how was Paul Reubens cast as Rex?
Hi there. I see they're loading our navigator R2-D2, and then we'll be on our way. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the flight.
Well, that was really its own saga, if you will, with multi-episodes.
All right, we're ready.
Oh, my.
Okay, so we had this droid, you know, and we had him named, and we had to find a voice for it. Well, of course, that's my job. It was tough. I mean, it's people don't understand how hard it is to cast a voice for something, particularly when it's a new character. It's really easy when it's an existing kind of character. You just have to match it, right? Mm-hmm. So here you have a brand new character, which, you know, WED really wasn't doing a lot of. And to be honest, at the time, Disney Animation wasn't doing a lot of, and they were used to using stars and things like that and whatever. So we had this character. It was designed, and we had a write-up of what it was. It was kind of this manic, full of itself, knew what it was doing, but really didn't character. And, okay, that's great. Let's go find a voice. And we kept trying voice after voice. We tried a few people around WED just to give us something to work with, because we had to time the bloody thing, you know. And Tom did it, and then we had several others. Then we started bringing in some people, including some classic standbys, as I call it, that we'd use. One was Frank Welker, who's done a lot of brilliant cartoon voices.
Yeah,
we tried female BJ Ward, who actually did a lot of safety spiels at Epcot. I mean, I was bringing her in probably once a month because they kept updating the safety spiels. You know, well, every time you turn around, a lawyer rewrites them because they find something else they want to cover. But that's just the way of the world. And we tried different people. I'd get recommended, oh, well, let's bring them in. And we'd bring them in for a day and record it. And Billy Barty came in and tried out for the role. And not because he was a midget, which has always been his concern, but because he had an interesting voice, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And just nothing worked. It just didn't work. And of course, George Lucas was going to have to sign off on the voice too. Now, meanwhile, of course, I've already hired Anthony Daniels to do C-3PO, and I had to make that deal and all that kind of stuff. That's easy. Mm. Here you're having to create a new voice for a character. Right. Well, part of what I used to do back then, because, you know, you're just nowadays I don't hardly go to movies. Back then I'd go to movies all the time because you did. And I'd just go by myself because I'm never know, I might hear a voice or something. So I did go to a lot of cartoons and things that had voices in them. And for some reason, I went to see Flight of the Navigator.
Oh, nice.
So I went to see it, and after the spaceship gets screwed up, and of course it becomes this really kind of crazy voice, I go, who the hell is that, you know?
You want to learn to swim, you've got to jump in the water.
Don't forget to feed Bruiser. Two all-beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions, onions, sesame seed bun.
Whoa! This can't be happening. I think I've gotten some stuff out of your head that has nothing to do with navigating this ship.
Now, remember, this is before, other than people who went to nightclubs, knew who Paul Reubens was, or Pee Wee Herman. He hadn't really had his film yet. He hadn't had Pee-wee's Playhouse or anything. And I'm going, who the hell is that? And, you know, I stayed to the end just to see the credits. Said, Paul Reubens. Okay, well, that's a great voice. And I was like floored. I came into the work. This was at night, right? I came into the office the next day, and Tom Fitzgerald came in. And I said, Tom, what are you doing? He said, well, Tom, I don't care what you're doing. I had already looked up the times of when the movie would be playing at some movie theaters around back then. And remember, we didn't have multiplexes back then.
Or YouTube.
Yeah, nothing. you had to go to a movie to see it, and you were lucky if it was a duplex and it had multiple showings. And I said, I don't care what you're doing. Right now, I want you to go see Flight of the Navigator because I found our voice. It's the voice of the ship. Just go. And he was like, well, no, I don't care what you just do it. Because by then, we're like, we're getting closer, right?
Right.
And he says, okay. So he goes, and he comes back, and he had enough face, says, book him. So we booked him. Uh-huh. Again, we're going to have George approve this. So I had a consultant who got a hold of him on the set of Pee-wee's Playhouse the first year. They were in production for the first season.
Wow.
I actually talked to him. And came back to me and said, okay, he's interested. We need to make an offer. And I said, okay. And it went around. And I said, so we ended up making a deal. Now, one of the things he wanted was a lifetime pass, which I said, I don't know if I can do that.
That's awesome. Go, Paul.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, that became a bit of a bone of contention. But it happened. I went and they said, okay, that's fine. I worked out the language. So he would get a silver pass for life. It doesn't go to his heirs as long as the voice is used in the attraction.
Ooh.
So sidelight, I'm sitting there going, okay, if they don't use it when they did the redo, great. He finally won't get his pass anymore. Well, they actually do have his voice in there if you look. So he still gets his pass.
Hi there. Welcome aboard.
I'm sure Tom did that because I know Tom and Pee-wee became friends, whatever. And we brought him in, and he did the first big session, and we had to send a limo the first time because he had a manager at the time who was kind of an ass and wanted me to treat him like a star and all that. But the guy knew how to drive. After that, he said, don't do the limo again. I said, I'll drive myself. I'm a big boy. And I said, okay, fine. But we recorded it. Now, again, we have to get George's approval still, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we set it up. We recorded it. We really liked it, but we sent it up to George. He loved it. And that's how Paul Reubens became the voice of Rex.
Wow.
Wow. Now, were you around when he did those recordings?
Oh, hell yeah.
And what were those like? And is there a video at all?
No.
Oh.
Well, if there is, let me think about that. I don't think we were allowed to record video because he was very concerned about that. There was some discussion of it, but I don't think we were allowed to. It's just one of, you know, again, he's an actor and you don't want that stuff getting out.
What did George Lucas have to say about the voice?
I don't know what he said. All I know is he approved it. And I was like, thank God I finally got that off my plate.
Oh, good.
Did you work closely with George Lucas on Star Tours?
He would come in once in a while. Most of the time he's up in, you know, up north because the film is basically being produced by ILM, the main film. Now I'm doing the commercials. Remember the fake commercials?
Star Tours is now offering convenient daily departures to the exotic moon of Endor. Come spend an afternoon or the entire day with the lovable Ewoks in their charming tribal villages. It's a fun-filled visit that you and your family will remember forever. Just ask for the Endor Express, available only from Star Tours. Non-stop flights leave every few minutes, so don't delay. Visit Endor today.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I had to produce those. You know, I had to arrange to get all the other little video monitors. You say I had to get work with the WED video department. We got to produce this. I had to cast the lady who didn't know she was going to be there for, you know, 30 plus years.
I was going to ask about that. Is that the video, you know, that you watch while you're waiting to ride?
Yeah, the flight attendant.
Yeah,
you know, we just. And then we had a Jenny Mulholland came up with this cockamamie hairdo and did this thing. And she got like $440 for it, $400 for her and $40 for her manager.
Oh, my gosh.
And of course, we had rights in perpetuity because that's the way we did things. And, of course, it's there for 30-plus years.
Wow.
I guess when they opened the new one, they tracked her down and she came in. I've been long gone. But
she's
it was
in
like,
the video for the new one as well. I think she's one of the
The whole seating. Yeah, the seat
and that was nice of them.
Yeah.
Every week, Dennis and Darth Taxis take a tongue-in-cheek ride through all of the Star Wars news of the day on Starships, Sabers, and Scoundrels. From incredible comedy bits to sharp commentary, these two are making big waves in the podcast world.
As of today, it is 59 days until Star Wars Celebration Orlando, and we have some updates. Here to discuss recent Celebration news is Michael Knipp, co-host of the Deucecast Movie Show and Card Trader Luminerdy. Michael, welcome to Starship Sabers and Scoundrels. Thanks for joining us.
Super excited to be here, guys. Cannot wait to talk Star Wars Celebration. It's one of my favorite things to attend, so let's get down to it.
Perfect, awesome. Perfect. All right. Well, up first, the first three Star Wars celebrities signing autographs have been announced at StarWarsCelebration.com. We have Jeremy Bullock, who's, of course, Boba Fett, mm-hmm. Felicity Jones, also known as Jyn Erso, mm-hmm. and the Emperor himself, Ian McDiarmid. They've all been confirmed. Mm-hmm. You can go ahead and get your pre-sale tickets by heading over to StarWarsAuthentics.com. So just for some context here, none of these people are particularly cheap. Jeremy Bullock is the cheapest of those three, and he's coming in at $35 for an autograph.
I prefer the phrase more price conscious, Dennis.
Well, that works too, Texas. He's $45 for a photo opportunity, and then, of course, $80 if you want to do both. Ian McDiarmid, after that, is $90 for his autograph. That's $100 for a photo or $190 combined. And then Felicity Jones comes in at the bargain price of $200 for an autograph, $250 for a photo op, and $450 for both. So what do you think, guys? Wow. You gonna be lining up for any of these?
Man.
that's a lot of party for $450. I mean,
yeah, man. I mean, I just, you know, she should take me out to dinner for $450. I mean, good gracious. Right. But I get it. I mean, she is, you know, out of those three, at least, she's the most currently active celebrity. So, I mean, you know, she and gosh, Oscar nominee. So,
well, yeah.
I mean, it's a big deal. I mean,
was that for Inferno or?
No, certainly not for Inferno. No, it was for the Stephen Hawking film that she did. I cannot remember the name of it, but she was nominated for that role, and she was fantastic in it, but it's $450 just seems a little much for the combo there. I mean, I don't know.
But on the other hand, I don't think that the Anaheim had the latest stars doing their autographs, did they? I don't seem to remember that.
Obviously they were on panels and whatnot, but I do not recall announcements that they were signing. And so this is kind of a big deal for completists. I mean, it may be like one and done type of opportunity because this might have been something that she agreed to do. And we know that particular character isn't going to be around anymore, at least. Well, we think we know that. I think she signed on for two films, but, you know, obviously the character is dead, so I guess it could be a prequel, but, I mean,
yeah,
to that, but, so,
yeah,
it's kind of a big deal, I guess.
I think with that two-movie deal, that was, you know, we've heard all these stories recently about they weren't certain exactly which ending they were going to use, and at one point Gareth Edwards thought that Disney was not going to let them kill off all these characters, so you know, I think that was the idea behind the two movie contract. My thought is this, is that I think we all thought that Carrie Fisher was going to be around forever, and we could always get her autograph and, you know, do the photo op with her, and then of course she tragically and suddenly passed away this past December. And so part of me wants to say, I need to take advantage of this if I'm ever going to get her autograph, especially if she's going to be something related to Star Wars. But the other part of me is that as much as I appreciate and like Jyn Erso, she's not my favorite Star Wars character, and I'm not an autograph completist. So while I really think it's cool that she's going to be there, I think I'm passing on this one. There's a lot of other stuff that I can do, a lot of other collectibles I could acquire for $450 for that total package.
Oh, sure.
I love all the discounts you get if you do both.
Yeah. Yeah. 0% discount. That's fantastic.
Now, the last time, when I was at Anaheim, I found out that Ian McDiarmid and Ray Park were going to do a photo together. And,
ooh, that'd be cool.
Yeah, I decided to use food money for that, and worked out pretty well. But that's my quest, is eventually to get their autographs on that picture, because Ian McDiarmid looked at me like I had lost my ever-loving mind, and Ray Park kept laughing. He kept saying, I love that, I love it. So, yeah, it was great. It was a great experience. And previously, and like I said, a friend had gotten his picture done with Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher and his son. He and his son did it. So, yeah, I'm with you, Dennis. You kind of have to strike when the iron's hot and you get these opportunities. Yeah. I still want Jeremy Bullock to sign my white prototype Boba Fett Black Series box that's unopened.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be awesome. Yeah. I mean, my whole thing, you know, sort of like we're alluding to, I mean, this really could be the only time Felicity does a celebration. I mean, or this could be her last one.
You've probably seen a few Planet of the Apes films. Did you know that in the 70s there was a Planet of the Apes TV show? Rounding out the trifecta of Skywalking Through Neverland podcasts is Talking Apes TV, a podcast covering the live-action and animated Planet of the Apes TV shows of the 70s. Hosts Richard Woloski and Mark Augustowicz bring a new vibrancy into the retro franchise. Have a listen.
All right, so Mark, this is The Good Seeds, which aired on October 4th, 1974.
Okay, so as with the last two episodes, we start with what? A nice single shot that they can put credits over. And this is a shot of the gorillas riding along a lake as they are trying to track down Alan, Pete, and Galen. The interesting thing about this is they go one step further with the shot, and we actually get some dialogue before the directed by comes up.
They were here. The tracks are fresh.
From there, we go to our heroes, Pete, Alan, and Galen, and they're running from the gorillas. And Pete mentions that Galen is dragging his tail.
Chimps do not have tails.
To Pete, that's just a saying. Stop dragging your tail. But to Galen, it means something totally different.
He actually seems to take a little bit of offense by it.
Oh, he does. Because what it was just a throwaway gag line for Pete means something totally different to Galen.
Yeah, there's a couple of times in this episode where Peter Allen will say something and Galen will say, that doesn't apply to monkeys, because he's taking it serious when they're just basically using it as, a metaphor.
Yeah, it's funny when Galen takes offense, Pete jokingly says, okay, Galen, you're Iron Man. Excuse me, Iron Ape. Of course, when he says, you're Iron Man, I'm thinking of Robert Downey Jr.
But I think that they're actually making a football reference.
That's way over my head. Way over my head. Well, you know what? I think you're right, because later on they do make a lot of football references that Sarah had to explain to me.
Yeah, and I'm all right.
Yeah, sure you are. You're Iron Man. Excuse me, Iron Ape.
And Michigan's a great running back.
Yeah, that was a while ago. Like about 2,000 years, give or take a century.
What doesn't your wife have to explain to you? Computers, football references, Disney. I guess she doesn't have to explain Star Wars to you. I hope.
No, yeah. Just today, she taught me how to read.
What about Planet of the Apes? She's not whispering in your ear like Cyrano de Bergerac, is she?
Cyrano de Bergerac, Zayas?
Yeah.
Well, truth be told, you know what? That's a whole other show. Let's move on.
Okay, so then we go into these nighttime shots where there are these running shots where, you know, they're still running away from the gorillas. And I believe these are probably a lot of the shots that you were talking about when we talked about episode number one.
where they had to shoot a lot of scenes of the three of them running, and Ron Harper, who plays Alan, says to the director, "Why are you shooting 2 minutes of us running? You're only going to use 10 seconds." And the director says, "Well, we may need to pad out some episodes."
Right, and I think that they use some of those shots here.
Nice.
At this point, they stop, and Alan pulls out a compass, which Galen's never seen before, because the apes, we learn, they track everything through the sky and the stars. So Alan pulls out this compass so that he can figure out which direction they're going in. And Galen, of course, asks about it.
"Yeah, it's called a compass, Galen. That needle always points north. And that cloud cover is a big break. Orko's men won't know what direction they're going in, so they'll go in circles. We can go straight on."
"Compass? Is it witchcraft?"
"Witchcraft, no. It's handicraft. I made it."
What Galen says is it witchcraft? I thought that was really interesting, because what is he referring to? What kind of witchcraft is there in the Planet of the Apes world? I hope at some point later on we find out, because that's really, really intriguing.
Right. But this is also, we're going to find out a lot about Alan in this episode. And the first thing that we find out is he says that he made it. And we start to find out at this point that he's actually good with his hands, which is actually going to come into play later on in the episode. The Planet of the Apes TV series seems to be really good at slowly setting their characters up. And if you listen to some past episodes, we're always saying, and that comes into play later. So it's not just thrown at you right away. They slowly build. And so they start showing Alan as being really good with his hands by just bringing out a compass that he built himself. But the compass has another importance to it, and that is the gorillas that are chasing after them. Now we cut to them, and we see them, and they stop, and they don't really know where they're going. And it said it's forbidden for them to travel at night when the clouds are covering the stars.
Because it's too dangerous. They don't know where they're going.
Yeah, they don't have anything like a compass.
"Forbidden to travel without the stars.
Nothing's forbidden when you ride for Urko.
Then how come the spirits have pulled our horses' tails in a circle?
All right. All right! Camp here. Make a fire. And stand watch to see if it chases the clouds. If not, we're going on until we catch them."
And they fear they're just going to go in circles.
Yeah, actually, one of the apes says that the spirits are sending them in circles. And this is actually the first time that I can recall where we get from the gorillas or any of the apes any kind of sense of a god or a deity. Do you remember that in any of the earlier episodes?
I want to say that Urko has brought up God before, and I believe Zaius has too. I couldn't tell you exactly where, but I'm pretty sure they have brought God up before.
But to this kind of importance, because I mean...
No. Before it was just, that's your God, this is our God. Something to that effect. Nothing like this.
Right, but he basically is saying that how come the spirits are sending us in circles as if, you know, they're being controlled by the spirits. And unless there's no clouds up there, they're forbidden to travel, which is actually kind of strange because when I first watched, I'm like, what kind of monkey rule is this? They can't track. Because even if they can't see the stars, they're tracking the humans, which means they're looking at stuff on the ground.
But when it's night, they can't see it. And they have no stars to guide them.
Right, but it just seemed to me like if they were tracking these humans, it's not going to matter if the humans are going north, south, east, or west, because the stars aren't telling them which way the humans are going. It's the stuff that they find on the ground and, you know, the trampled sticks and stuff. So what would the clouds covering the stars matter when it came to tracking the humans? I can understand, like, if you're just traveling in general, like you're going from town to town. But when you're tracking someone, it seems like it shouldn't matter because the stars don't help you track.
Which this really works out for Alan, Pete, and Galen because they keep moving throughout the night.
Right, because he's got his compass. Well, it doesn't really work out for them, though.
No, because off they go running through the woods. Now, in these shots here, you can really see Galen's ape walk. He's got a very distinguishable running limp walk. And this is the first time they've ever really shown it for a good amount of time where it really stands out. And I bring this up because I was such a huge fan when I was a kid that's the way I used to run with this crazy limp. And my teachers used to get so mad at me because I would not run like the other kids. I would run with the Galen limp. And they got so mad at me saying, "Rich, you got to stop that. That is just so stupid." Of course, as a kid, the more they said it was stupid, the more I did it. But can you imagine teachers saying that the way you run is stupid?
Teachers shouldn't be saying stuff like that.
No, but I was such a huge fan. That's just the way I run. That's the way Galen runs. That's just the way I'm learning how to run. So now I think Galen's running limp really does him in because he stumbles down a small hillside.
Right, but here's actually an interesting thing because now we're starting to realize how the major trust factor we have because they try to stop him. They tell him to slow down, and he says he lays mention to the compass, and he runs ahead, not realizing that if he doesn't have the compass, he's still got to be careful. But he's putting all his faith and trust in this small device that Alan has created.
Come on, we're following the handicraft. Come on.
Hey, Gator, heads up. Take it easy. It's rough in there.
And he actually does more than a stumble down the cliff. He does a major tumble down the cliff and injures himself.
Right.
And now Pete makes a tourniquet to wrap around Galen's leg to help with his injured leg. And they also build this stretcher that they're going to use to carry Galen to the next village, or actually not the next village, because what they actually stumble upon is a farm.
And this is the next morning, so I don't know how far they were carrying Galen.
And here's something else very interesting, because in this episode, we start to learn a lot about Alan, first with the compass and the fact that he built it, and now something very interesting in regards to the farm.
What is it?
It's a farm. Uh-huh. It looks isolated. Uh-huh. This could be it, Pete. Show me a couple of nice, smelly old tractors in his home sweet home.
We don't learn that he grew up on a farm just yet, but we learn that he's very comfortable on a farm and that he's probably very familiar with a farm. And we now starting to get some of Alan's backstory, which is very important because Alan has always been the one who wants to go home and wants to go home. And we're going to learn a lot about that in this episode, which is pretty cool.
I thought it was interesting that Pete says,
I'm Pete. I don't care if this farmer doesn't have a daughter.
Actually, they start to inject a lot of humor like that in this episode.
Well, Pete has always been funny. At first, it was kind of a Debbie Downer quip, but now he's that last episode when he told Urko to you know, loosen up. he's the one to watch for comedy.
So anyway, so they go down to the farm and they go knocking on the door. And the interesting thing about this is, I was really expecting a human to answer the door.
Oh, yeah?
Because all the villages that we go into, you know, there are humans in these villages. And I thought, you know, they were going to knock on the door. Human was going to answer the door.
So just to be clear, it's Alan who comes knocking at the door. Because Galen, who usually has to knock at the door because he's an ape, now it's Alan because Galen is still injured.
Like I said, I was expecting a human to answer the door, sort of like the village with the character of Miller in the last episode. But who instead answers the door? But an ape. And the ape is the farmer, which is very strange because up until this point, we've always thought of that kind of work as being human labor, the kind of work that only humans do, which later on we're actually going to find out that this ape family can't even afford humans. So this is going to start, for the first time, of seeing a class structure amongst the apes.
Okay, Gen Xers, Techno Retro Dads is the podcast for you. Don't believe me? Just let Shaz and Schwa tell you themselves.
Oh, me.
Ah.
Moving right along, remembering old times and new news. With earbuds, you can't lose.
You know it won't be boring.
Every Monday morning, you can download a new show.
Yeah.
And get ready to go.
Hey, you! Get up and stop that snoring.
Techno Retro Dads.
Have fun with history.
Movies, games, and toys we share with our families.
Techno Retro Dads.
With friends both young and old.
Memories that I made with them are worth more than gold.
Moving right along when buddies seem more like brothers.
They're joined by some others.
And form a lazy book club.
Saturdays are great while watching cartoons with cereal.
On a plane that's ethereal.
Be sure to save your pay stub.
No, you're just trying to rhyme.
Yep.
Techno Retro Dads.
Cause two's just not enough.
Come along and join right in.
If you enjoy stuff.
Prepare for digital beam transport.
I call it user-friendly.
I call it luck. In my experience, there's a thing of luck.
Don't get technical with me.
Techno-Retro-Dads.
Greetings, programs! Whether you're finishing out the school year, getting ready for a big trip to Orlando, or finally getting into your spring cleaning, it's the perfect time to tune in to Techno Retro Dads, where we're doing our part to make today better by bringing in a healthy portion of yesterday. I'm Shaz Bazaar, and with me, a mile high up in the sky, is my good buddy Jedi Schwa.
I need a good portion of yesterday today, so I can double my day.
That would be a great idea.
Yes.
Or instead of the way back, the day back machine. The How about that? Machine.
I just need an extra day. If I could just tack it on. I have so much to get done before I leave.
Yeah, I recognize that, man. I can empathize. Just last week, I was trying to get a whole week's worth done in like 2 days.
That's what I'm doing.
Excellent. Excellent. And the weather's great up there, I'm supposing. It's really spring?
Here? Oh, it's absolutely beautiful. It's been in the 70s.
It's been in the 70s here, too. Not as much sunshine as you've been having, you know. It's been kind of rainy, kind of icky weather. You know what they say about April. So it was still April showers.
Oh, dear. April showers.
April showers. They continue. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Is it raining cats and dogs down there?
Definitely. I even saw a bear outside in the rain yesterday.
Ooh, bear. It must have been a drizzly bear.
Yeah, last time it rained cats and dogs, I stepped in a poodle.
Hey, speaking of animals and rain, I wonder why sheep don't shrink when it rains.
I like sheep. They're nice and fluffy. Like cotton candy on four legs.
Yeah. Hey, remember Dolly, the cloned sheep?
Oh, yeah, that's been a while back. That's been a while. What do you think Dolly said to her parent?
I am you.
Ooh. Now, speaking of cloning, last week, a microbiologist successfully cloned Brontosaurus DNA with the DNA of a chigger.
Whoa, that's pretty weird. What do you call it?
Dino-mite. Get it? Dino-mite, you know? It's dynamite. What's this stuff?
Some cereal. It's supposed to be good for you.
Did you try it?
I'm not going to try it. You try it.
I'm not going to try it.
Let's get Sheldon.
Yeah.
He won't eat it. He hates everything. He likes it.
I love my cereal.
We do have cereal news.
Cereal
we have a lot
news.
Of cereal news that I wanted to share.
What you got?
Well, this time of year, food changes.
Food changes this time of the year?
It does.
What? It doesn't change the other times of the year, you know, when you're eating it. It just goes right through you. It doesn't change at all. I don't know where you're living, but that's not exactly what happens here.
That sounds like
this is getting
very
surreal.
I need to change my diet. No. Food changes its flavor. This time of year, because it is autumn, during this time of the earth being tilted neither towards nor away from the sun with its axis. It's getting too scientific. Look, they're adding pumpkin spice to junk, okay? That was where I was going. I've got some pumpkin spice news.
Pumpkin spice.
We're adding pumpkin spice to the
spice
news.
Muffins and pumpkin spice cereal now? Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying now. Kellogg's is debuting a new cereal bowl. A pumpkin spice latte.
Bowl?
That is correct. They're serving this at Kellogg's NYC Cereal Cafe, which I don't know if that's the same one we've talked about before or not.
Yeah, it's the one we talked about a while back, I think.
These are getting popular.
Very popular.
I like this. Someone needs to sponsor us so we can, you know, start traveling the country and trying these places out.
Multimeal's going to sponsor us, and we can be on the Blacklight Special.
Yeah.
It'd be very surreal.
That's.
I love black lights.
Well, until they do that, we'll just have to report the cereal news to you here. So, the pumpkin spice latte bowl has actual espresso powder in it. That's where the latte
Does
part
comes. Glow they didn't under just, the black light.
Yeah, they didn't just go pumpkin spice, man. They went pumpkin spice latte flavor. So, espresso powder plus white chocolate chips on top of Frosted Mini Wheats pumpkin spice cereal.
This sounds addictive to the pumpkin spice lovers.
You're right. It does.
This needs some investigation.
I honestly don't know what you could say the words pumpkin spice in addition to that wouldn't be appealing to those pumpkin spice people.
Here, get your pumpkin spice action figures here. 5 points of articulation.
See, that's how Kellogg's got, not Kellogg's, that's how Kenner can start to, Hasbro. They're called Hasbro Kenner. Now, aren't they?
Let's get Kenner involved.
They just add pumpkin spice
just,
to everything.
Just add some pumpkin spice on your Zuvio figure.
Yeah, it's a pumpkin spice Constable Zuvio. That'll get him off the pegs.
Constable Zuvio, now with pumpkin spice. Spice.
Pumpkin spicy old Zuvio.
We'll call it a spice, spicer up. Oh, just add pumpkin spice to your Hasbro figures. Your Constable Zuvio with pumpkin spice.
It works, I'm telling you. It'll get rid
like
of them.
Krispy Kreme donuts. Mommy, I want a dozen Constable Zuvios with pumpkin spice. Oh, honey, you say they can have pumpkin spice? Are there other pumpkin spice action figures? Yes, Mommy, they're all pumpkin spice. Let's buy the store out. Look, it's a pumpkin spice add-on. It's only $310.
Hey, they got to clear the shelves, you know? They got to get make room.
This year, Force Friday becomes Pumpkin Spice Force Friday. Bring your mother.
It's going to be huge. It's going to be huge. It's going to be huge with all the pumpkin spicers.
Just sprinkle it on my hair. It gets huge. It's like the pumpkin spice.
Techno Retro Dads History Lesson.
This week in history, in pop culture of techno retro times, let's put it that way, we've got just a few dates that take place.
April 15th, 1912. Oh. In our real history, you know, that is the fateful day of the Titanic sinking. And in our fake history, of course, you know, Jack and Rose, we know of them and their wonderful diamond. But even more importantly than that, some time-traveling dwarves appeared on the Titanic.
Oh, with all kinds of great references. R2-D2 was there. Sark, the MCP, they're all there.
Wait, Sark wasn't on the Titanic.
No, but
he appeared
in the
later.
Movie.
He appeared later. Yes, okay. In Time Bandits.
Time Bandits.
Our heroes, our slightly shorter heroes, appeared right before the Titanic crashed, sending them into the ocean.
That didn't last too long.
It didn't, but they made, because of that, they made it to where they were going.
Well, see, it's very important to make the wrong turns into a right. You know, two wrong turns don't make a right?
No, but three right turns make a left.
Do yourself a favor and check out Techno Retro Dads. Techno Retro Dads was ripped from the grasp of the Golaverse by RetroZap Network and Joey Tavano.
Anyone on Techno Retro Dads after that?
You know what? This is turning into an episode of Techno Retro Dads. We have to move on.
That kind of hurts my throat.
Okay, we're almost at the end. The Trade Federation is a fantastic show that started out as the first podcast dedicated to Topps Star Wars card trader. Since then, the show has expanded to cover just about anything in collecting. From comics to Mondo posters to high-end figures, Bill and Joe have a ton of knowledge to share.
The Trade Fed crew, Joe, myself, Brent, and Steven, we've decided to here and there try to read, well, really just to kind of read like one run or one title together week, like read one issue of that title and then talk about it on the episode. And since Steven is kind of new to the whole thing, we figured that the Darth Vader title is probably like one of the best places to just go to jump into comics for the first time. And so so that's what we're doing. And so today we're going to talk about Darth Vader number one. We've all reread Darth Vader number one. We've all spent a little more time on it today or the last couple of days. And we're going to kind of like walk through this issue and give like some more reactions and, you know, just talk about it.
Right. Hopefully some people want to like read along issue by issue if they haven't, yep. Or maybe even if they have and just go follow along at home.
Yeah, and join us on social media and chat about it and kind of like make this little book club thing going on.
Right. Yep. So I cracked this thing open just like an hour before we recorded. And right away I was like, this looks great. Like, the art in this comic is better than I remembered somehow. It hasn't been that long since I read 25 or whatever the last one was. And already I was like, whoa, this looks good.
I agree. Yeah, that opening page. So you have the crawl, but then when you get to that opening page on Tatooine and you have essentially the reversal of Luke in Return of the Jedi entering Jabba's palace, and you have sort of this like mirror reversal evil version of Vader. Like, you think Luke is kind of tapping the dark side when he's like force choking Gamorrean guards in that scene in Return of the Jedi, and perhaps he is a little bit, but Vader is not messing around.
Yep.
Yeah, he just goes in, starts cutting people. He's like, let me in, no problem. Before you go too far, I just want to say, when you crack that comic open and you just get a black page that says a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, dot, 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 and then you flip it and they've actually got like the crawl as here's what's going on. I hear the music like it's playing in the room with me every single time.
Yeah, I like how they're including the crawl in a lot of their books and comics and stuff. It's Star Wars, you know?
Yeah, yeah. The frame... Because it's been 2 years ago, right, that this came out now?
Pretty much,
so,
yeah.
Like, so I got, like, nostalgic reading this because this and Star Wars were, like, my reintroduction into Star Wars comics, the Star Wars issue number one. And I just remember getting to the frame where it's the shot of Vader standing in front of Jabba with, like, all Jabba's palace, all the aliens and everyone that's there behind him. And I just remember stopping on that and just probably staring at it for a couple minutes, taking it all in, of seeing who was there and just the artwork of the characters. And, you know, you have Boba Fett and Zuckuss and Dengar in the back and IG-88. And, you know, it's just fun to look at. And that was like, man, I'm so glad to have this back in like canon comics. So I just remember that frame.
It's funny because Boba Fett's there and Black Chrysanthemum is there. Right behind him. That's a little like foreshadowing teaser to the end of this issue. This panel was it was at the end of Star Wars number one as a preview of Darth Vader. I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
I should take out my issue and take a look, or maybe it's in the digital version. I'm pretty sure it was there as like just the teaser for Vader number one at the end. And I think that's partly why it's that particular panel stands out to me.
Maybe that's why, maybe that's when I saw it, was that ish. I just remember that, like that panel.
That whole scene, which I guess is the majority of the comic, but with Vader in Jabba's palace, is something I talked about way, way back on the show, where I feel like that whole thing is done so vividly that when I rewatched the films, I was surprised to not see it happen. It was like that. That's just a thing that happened in the movies. Like, it just plays in my mind like it was in the film. And then I was like, wait a minute, that was a comic thing. Why can I remember it so vividly in my brain? So the whole kind of storyline behind the Darth Vader thing is they're just past obviously the Death Star blowing up, and then they've got this one starts just after the events of Star Wars
number
is it just
one.
Star Wars number one, where they they're in like a weapons factory and they blow it up. They do a bunch
it might be stuff. Like two or three. It's after that whole event. So Simoon,
yeah, that was 1 through 3 was that first arc.
Yeah, so this starts right like directly after that. When that's another loss, because they lost basically like a weapons factory. I mean, they blew it up. So
right. So now this huge weapons factory is gone, and the Death Star is gone, and there's only one guy around to take the blame for it, and that's Darth Vader. So that's kind of the whole arc over the 25 issues is the Emperor is not thrilled with Vader's performance. And he's going to punish him in various annoying ways. And it's a nice way to make you go, like, I want Darth Vader to win. Like, I know he's a villain, but I still want him to defeat everyone.
Right, because, he's in the Emperor's doghouse, and we dislike the Emperor, and so we like Vader in this one. One thing also that's in my mind as I'm reading this is Star Wars Destiny, and I'm just thinking of like all the cards that appear in this one. For example, you have Darth Vader, you have Jabba the Hutt, you have maybe Crime Lord, or at least an attempted Crime Lord, failed Crime Lord, and you have Force Choke, and you have, it's like a Vader deck versus a Jabba deck, and these things are like playing out. It's really cool to just kind of think of that card game and how it captures Star Wars really well. I really hope that they bring in some comics and comic book characters and some novels characters into that game.
I do too. And I think they will eventually get there, but that's going to be a waiting game to find out on that.
Yeah, so go ahead, Brent.
I'll just say this is also when we found out that General Tag
survived.
Was alive. Yeah. And he kind of becomes Vader's nemesis throughout this series arc.
Yep.
To a very satisfying conclusion.
Yes, indeed. Yep. I'll give one criticism here as we get into this like scene where he's at Jabba's palace and he's sort of standing this whole time. He's standing over the trapdoor down to the Rancor pit. There's like a lot of pages of him just deflecting bolts. I mean, I guess it's like, it shows how, you know, powerful he is or whatever and his prowess. But I mean, that's like 1, 2, 3 plus full pages of him just deflecting blaster bolts. But I can't complain too much because this comic is packed so full of stuff.
Yeah.
And when I finished reading this, I thought back to the previous comic I had read, which was Darth Maul #1. And I kind of was like, wow, not that much happened in Darth Maul #1 when you compare it to Vader #1.
Yeah.
Vader #1 had a lot more going on in it than I had actually remembered as well.
Steven had sent over his thoughts and like you said, one of the main reasons for doing this reading issue at a time is how many Steven must have asked us like 5 times, 6 times, just random times, hey guys, I want to start reading the comics, where should I start? And we'd always give him suggestions, and then I think it'd always fall through, and then like a month, 2 months later go, hey guys, I want to start reading the comics. So we're finally like, okay, we're all going to read them together, so you'll finally check them out. So he sent over his thoughts because he did read issue #1. And he said that it was, you know, very interesting. He had never really read comics before, and so it was shorter than he expected. But that he's happy with that link because he can stick with it. But the point I wanted to bring up was what you just talked about, Bill. He was talking about the scene where he's just continuously deflecting bolts, laser blasts, and he said it reminded him of, spoiler alert, the end of Rogue One, and how he's just this invincible threat that will not be stopped. And I thought that was kind of an interesting comparison that he made from that scene to the scene of him just standing in front of Jabba and not even really being that offensive, just taking everyone down.
All right, any Game of Thrones fans out there? If you're looking for a podcast that tells it like it is and loves the world of Song and Ice and Fire, join Kevin Rampenberg and myself for We Know Nothing. We cover every episode of the show Game of Thrones as it airs and provide instant reactions and insight from reading the books way too many times. Just have a listen.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
Welcome to We Know Nothing, a retrozap podcast for the HBO series Game of Thrones and the book series A Song of Ice and Fire. With your hosts, Kevin and Joe.
Hey, I told you third time's a charm, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all right. We just made this MP3 skip before we came on here. That's fantastic. Anyways, guys, wow. The Winds of Winter did not disappoint, did it? Welcome to We Know Nothing. My name is Joe, and join me, as always, Kevin Rempelberg. How you doing, man?
I'm good. What a great episode.
What an amazing episode. Seriously, you know, that last... that last 10, 15 minutes really matters to make it feel just that much more theatric and not rushed in any way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with that. Yeah, they needed that extra, you know, because the whole beginning part with Cersei and...
Oh, yeah.
It was paced very well. It wasn't rushed, like you said.
It was... The way they were able to bring in music and add dramatic tension to the entire thing. It was just really, really amazing what they were able to do at the beginning, what they were able to do through the entire episode, and just how many different people they touched in the length of the show. It was just epic and theatric in its execution rather than hourly TV show pace. And man, I like that. I feel like this show at this point needs more of that and a lot less of these 54 minute, you know, to 48 minute episodes that just kind of middle around.
Yeah, if they're saying they only have so many 13 episodes left, they better not, you know.
Yeah.
I'll take every minute I can.
Exactly. I mean, there were even people that they didn't even hit in this episode. There was, you know, Brienne. There was the Hound. There was, I think that, and the Brotherhood Without Banners. So I think that was, as I was trying to think, those are the people they really didn't, they didn't touch upon at all. But aside from that, man, they did everything else.
Oh, you're great. I kept on saying wow over and over again.
Yeah. A lot of payoff in this episode. A lot of theories that we had put forth and that a lot of people put forth for years confirmed.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's get into it. Yeah. Interesting. So it starts off King's Landing, the twins, which was interesting. Oh, going back to the twins, huh?
Yeah.
Winterfell finally with the Stark banners since haven't been seen since season 2.
Yeah, everyone was looking for that.
Yeah. The Wall, Meereen, and Dorne. So pretty interesting there. We're hitting back on Dorne after like maybe one episode that we saw them in.
Yeah, the very first episode. So yeah. They were in 1 and 10.
Yeah, that was it. So but you know what? It was a brief moment, but you know what? It mattered. And we'll get to that afterwards. Written by Benioff and Weiss and directed by that guy, Sapochnik, who did the last episode. And he also did Hard Home.
He did Hard Home, yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, they should stick with this guy. They should bring him back for more. I like what he did.
Yeah, well, yeah. Either he's lucky and gets the good episodes or he really knows what he's doing.
I think it might be the latter one.
Yeah, maybe.
I think maybe he got lucky with Hard Home and they brought him back to do some good stuff.
Well, he definitely does a good job.
Yeah. I mean, he did that entire battle last episode.
Yeah.
So, for sure. All right. So, episode starts, King's Landing. And as we were talking about, an amazing musical scene with the trial beginning and everyone preparing for their day. And Tommen and Margaery. And Cersei, and there are these ominous bells, like bells of doom, you know? Mm-hmm. And this is the what's going to be the trial of Loras Tyrell and then Cersei Lannister.
But not Margaery, right? She was not a trial anymore.
Margaery was already absolved.
She atoned, blah, blah, blah.
She had atoned, but really, I mean, the High Sparrow was saying, we'll let the, you know, if we have the queen in our pocket, that's all good and fine with us.
Yeah,
and the music was just so processional in this point in the story. I was like, wow, it's like everything was decided. I figured we called it last time. We said Cersei is gonna blow up the entire city with wildfire.
Yeah.
So, we said that. I didn't know if they were gonna go there at this point though. And it was
well. It all
cool.
Made sense when I saw it all underneath that because that was in one of Bran's visions early on.
Sure,
wildfire exploding.
That's true.
And that now it makes sense that I guess he can see that coming. I don't know.
I guess so, right?
Either that or it's from a previous.
Oh yeah, the Mad King maybe.
Yeah.
Who also had that, but whatever that was, it was a visual reminder that there was wildfire under the city.
Yep.
And they definitely name, you know, you can tell when things are going to happen because they name check it beforehand in the show.
Yeah.
You know, we got a little bit of that checking here today, too. We'll touch on that later. But even before we get to the wildfire, just notice, like, I figured this trial would go on and someone was going to die. Like, Loras Tyrell would die. Maybe Cersei would die. Something, you know, it would be very processional and it would, like, the trial would be almost like what the one for Tyrion. A few, you know, I figured that's kind of what it was. But no. Nothing like
that. Everyone died. Everyone.
Grandmaster Pycelle.
Yeah.
Oh, went down. And then Loras, you know, Loras confesses to everything. He includes sleeping with Renly Baratheon.
Yeah.
He becomes one of the Faith Militant. He gets mutilated and carved. His head gets carved. And I'm like, okay, well, this makes kind of makes sense. And I go like, will they have him, like, be fighting? Will he be, like, you know, he was a good swordsman at one time. Will he be, like, fighting for them and, like, you know, lopping a lot of people's heads off? I don't even know at that point.
Yeah.
And then we get to, I keep on calling him Robert Strong, but it's not Robert Strong in this iteration. It is
Sir Gregor Clegane.
And Sir Gregor holds Tommen in his room.
In his chambers.
Yeah, and now I have to his chambers. I have to say, Cersei's dressing a little differently than she usually does. All in black, you know?
Yep.
My notes here say Cersei looks hot. That's what it says here, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty awesome, like, little shoulder pad she had on.
Looked good. She was rocking it, you know?
Yep.
She really was. She looked pretty good. But I couldn't tell
metal.
If she looked pretty metal, I gotta say that. But I couldn't tell if the black was, like, mourning because she was about to kill her son. I didn't know if Gregor was, like, about to kill Tommen because clearly, you know, I didn't know had she gone that far.
Yeah, I thought I was saying, oh, Tommen's gonna go in there and she's just gonna burn it down with him inside of it.
Mm. Yeah, I didn't know if that might have been an idea too. Because once she crossed him, who knew where her head was at? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, she's always been about, like, kids first. You know, I love my kids. I love my kids. But this, you know, he totally didn't, you know, he totally forsook her.
Yeah.
You know, that was it. And then Qyburn and his little birds killing Pycelle. Unbelievable.
I know. I thought Varys was going to kill him.
It's true. Yeah.
He did in the book.
He did. So that was an interesting way they transposed that, huh? Because it was similar, right? The little birds killed Pycelle still in the book, right?
I don't think so, because it's in the epilogue, I think.
Yeah.
And Kevin Lannister comes walking in the room, and Pycelle has his head down on the table.
Oh.
And he walks over there and he's dead, and Varys is, like, in the shadows, and he comes out.
Yeah.
And he actually shoots him with a crossbow.
Okay.
And kills Kevin Lannister.
Huh. Not bad. I do remember that, yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot that Kevin Lannister is dead in the books.
And he's dead now in the show.
Sure is. But we're not there yet. We're not even there yet. I mean, it just paced so beautifully where these people die, these people die, these people die. Excuse me. And, okay, the Lancel Lannister gets stabbed in the sewers by another sparrow, or a bird, little bird. What do they call them? Little birds, right?
Little birds, yeah. Spiders, or whatever.
All right, that's it, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, to get every show in one feed, just subscribe to RetroZap Podcast Network on iTunes and Google Play. Until next time, this is Joe Tavano, signing off.